Good afternoon, members, and welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, where we are going to be looking into the fourth quarter performance of our entity, SA Tourism. Honourable members, I would allow us to do an introduction so that we are familiar and know who is amongst us so that we can refer to each other accordingly. I am Lusizo Makubena Mashele and the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. I'll hand over to you on this level.
Thanks, Chair. Simbiwe Begwa from KZN, representing ANC in this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Sibongile Nkomo, representing the Inkatha Freedom Party from Shawela in Soweto. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Manuku Masehela, member of this committee, deployed by the African National Congress from Limpopo Province.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Adams, and I'm from the Northern Cape, where we follow the sun with the people, and I'm employed here by my gracious organization, the ANC. Thank you.
Good day, Chair. Good day, everyone. This is Tembalang Tleko from the Eastern Cape, the home of legends. Thank you.
I'm equally so. I'm from the home of the legends. I brag about it. My name is Vatiswa Bam Mugwanya, and I'm the member of this committee deployed by the National African National Congress. Thank you.
Good morning, James Force. I'm the DA spokesperson on tourism, and I'm from the Western Cape Province.
Morning, Greg Krumbach. I also represent the DA in this committee from KwaZulu-Natal.
I would hand over to the CEO that he does the introduction.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honourable members. I'm going to start on my extreme right and just allow everyone the opportunity to introduce themselves. Bye.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Vashni Mutheya. I'm Chief Strategy Officer at South African Tourism.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Monabi Sifandeso. I'm the very newly elected Chair of South African Tourism, my fourth day on the job.
Good afternoon again. My name is Sifa Njona, and I'm the CEO of South African Tourism.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Thembiso Dlamini. I'm the Chief Operations Officer. Thanks.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Zanele Mtlageza. I am Chief of Staff at SA Tourism.
Good morning, good afternoon, Honourable Members. My name is Tom Bauer. I'm the CFO of SA South African Tourism.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Anemi Milan. I'm a DDG in the Department of Tourism and now responsible for public entity oversight as well.
Good afternoon, all. I'm Melanie Titus, PLO in the Office of the Minister.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members. I'm Zandile Zondo. I'm Assistant Director, Entity Oversight at Department of Tourism.
Good afternoon, honourable members. My name is Armstrong Manganye. I'm the Deputy Director and Entity Oversight from the Department of Tourism.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Petra van Niekerk. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General of Tourism. Thank you.
Afternoon, everybody. I'm Jerry Boltina, the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. Thank you, Chair.
Sanbonani, ngifisa ukuzwa yomi sebenza njengomuntu.
Thank you very much, honorable members and members of South African Tourism, our only entity led by the CEO and the very new chairperson of the board, which would be looking to the governance of SAT in executing their activities. Honourable members, we know that we will be looking into the fourth quarter performance of the entity, and I would now hand over to the CEO to lead us into the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My chairperson, is there one thing you want to say in the beginning, or can I go first? Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to come present the Q4 performance results. It's always an awkward period because we've got to be very careful as not to talk about the overall performance for the year, because we won't be coming to that one to come talk about the annual performance. The way we structured the presentation, there's quite a lot of information around and it's quite detailed that side. So I'll spend a little bit just to talk about the overall perspective where we find ourselves as an economy and the situation analysis. I will spend some time then to go through the different KPIs. We have 33 of them, and I'll go through and with 33 of them divided into five different programs, and I'll go through each and every single one of them, and then after that talk about the finances, human capital, and then I look forward to the questions and areas of clarifications after.
A quick apology, CEO. Honourable members, we've got some refreshments outside. I'd request that we leave one individually so and grab something and come back and sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we are. That's the presentation that we are going into. No, it is. It's dated 6th June.
Yeah, that's what I've got.
Okay. Over to you.
Thank you very much. So I'll start on the slide 2, where we just talk about the situation analysis. I think some of this, what you see here, has really been overtaken by the news that we all saw yesterday, from the Stats SA, essentially talking about the shrink in our economy of 2.2%, just for the quarter, which is the worst performance over the last 9 years as an example. And that gives you a bit of a sense in terms of where we find ourselves as an economy. The rand exchange rate is also important to us, both from an investment perspective, because a lot of the funds that we invest in our foreign markets do have a currency impact on that side, and vice versa. You know, for international tourists, the weaker the rand, the more attractive we become from a tourism destination. However, we are always very clear not to market South Africa as a cheap destination, but more of a value for money destination. I think those are some of the things there. Obviously, the local economic climate gives you a sense in terms of some of the stickiness that we may have around domestic tourism, essentially. I'm now going to go to slide number 4. And this is really just talking about the leisure tourism side of the business, the marketing side. What are our focus areas? Volume and value. These are espoused in our APPs that we essentially have from that perspective. Transformation is a key enabler. We not only view transformation as merely just ticking the boxes and make sure that we've got new players. We want these new players to come and introduce new products and experiences so as to grow the wider scope and speak to these new opportunities that are there. Off-peak seasons are quite important, especially we've seen around trade at times that they have a focus on the overseas market, international market. Even during off-peak, they would rather do maintenance than actually lower prices for domestic markets as well. So these are some of the issues that are there. Collaboration with provincial tourism authorities, very, very important, because nothing happens at national, everything happens at local level, so we've got those put in place. Maximizing resources, partnering with media, especially across government-owned spaces. We're talking SAA, Brent SAA, Sand Parks as an example, to make sure that we leverage as much as we can on all of these state-owned entities. And then building a unified brand by developing toolkits. One of the things I'd like to highlight out there is that SA Tourism really does not have a brand, essentially, from that perspective. When you compare ourselves with our competitors around the world, you look at India, truly amazing India. Even Rwanda's got a visit Rwanda perspective. You know, so those are one of the things where we're trying to look at, do we need to create a brand identity that actually we can start to promote and give us a bigger element on that side. Together with NDT, we work quite closely with them, especially around barrier side. You know, we are a marketing agency, but if we don't have a product that is competitive, if we don't have enablers that are there, our work basically cannot be able to see through on that side. Then on the business event side, which is the next slide, really quite important over there, big space where we bid for big events around the world to come and to be held in South Africa. That's quite important. But more importantly, from the feedback from this very same committee, to start to look at smaller provinces, at smaller areas to make sure they also get activities in that regard. And I'll give an update as to some of the work that is there. Grading Council, look at it more broadly from a quality assurance perspective in terms of our establishment, in terms of our experiences, etc. That's quite key. You know, this is one area that we are really looking at quite closely to make sure that we can catch up with a lot of the technological advancements that have overtaken some of our value proposition on that space over there. Now, I'm going to go to slide number 8, and now I'm going to go into the actual APPs themselves. Just as a guide, there are three measures here. Green, remember we're speaking Q4 here, so green is what has been achieved, red is what's not been achieved, black is more that is there's yet to be audited, so therefore we cannot pronounce on it at the moment, but I can give you a sense in terms of where we're at in that space. I've spoken about how we've taken the 33 APPs and divided them into 5 programs. So the first program is what we call corporate support and really talks about essentially, you know, the central HQ elements that we need to get right in order to support the business on that side. The first one is the staff satisfaction score achieved. We've just recently done a staff survey, which we do once a year, and unfortunately it's not coming through on Q4, but however will be included in the annual results, where we actually look over the last 12 months, as opposed to just the 3 months that we have here. You know, a lot of work has really been done in terms of making sure that we've got a staff that is engaged and is able to perform and deliver from the perspective. Percentage staff turnover, we've achieved in that perspective, and I'll go into those details on the next slides that actually start to look at those various elements in that regard. I remember, honorable members, I'd made a notification last time that you know, every organization needs a healthy staff turnover to make sure that people start to move, and I think I've quipped that the state tourism, no one leaves the state tourism, but I'll give you a bit of a sense in terms of where we're at on that side. The vacancy rate, again, an element that we, after the restructuring of Project Ignite and how we are filling up the organization as well, to give you a bit of a sense there, on average, we are onboarding 5 people every month at SA Tourism that are coming through globally across the business. So essentially, we are bringing people through, we are plugging those gaps that we have there. And more importantly, what it does then, it reduces our reliance on outsourcing of certain elements of the business. So we're starting to bring those in. But I'll give an example in terms of what will always be outsourced just because of its nature and some of the elements that we bring in there as well. Work support program is in place to make sure that we build our capacity for people and everything else basically from that perspective. Percentage representation of employees with a disability, happy to report on that front that we're on target and it's a green space there. Then the percentage staff migration from old to the new structure. Again, just to remind everyone that we moved our operating model from a top-down hierarchical one to really flat structure that is matrix-driven. The key thing over there, we've given ourselves a target of 155 people migration. We had 154. You know, so unfortunately, the way we do our APPs, we don't show closeness. We either show on or off. You know, but you know, essentially there's just one staff member that we have to move across, and this essentially turns into becoming a green one. very proud of this one, especially again in the light of what we've seen, especially focused around the public sector, municipalities as an example, you know, where we've seen the Auditor General give reviews around the state of the quality of the audits they've done. An unqualified audit report for SA Tourism is something that is quite important for us, but not just that, unqualified audit, but also the performances linked to that. The BE level achieved, really in place on that side, to make sure as we look at this business, we're always driving transformation, we're always driving inclusion in terms of our procurement practices, and we've got a specific project linked around transformation right across the organization. The second program is a business enablement program. Again, we've got one of our APPs, stakeholder satisfaction score. This is important. This is really about how often and how well we are engaging with the private sector, with the actual businesses and the trade that is executing the tourism space. One of the key elements, essentially, when I walked into this role was that to make sure that SA Tourism's work becomes relevant, basically, to business itself and make sure that those numbers are achieved on that side. So that one is definitely green there. Trade webinars conducted also as well. It's just a different platform that we engage, we listen to, we respond, and make sure that we can move forward with the business basically from that side. Approved tourism growth strategy became very important to make sure that we've got a compass, you know, as we move towards a 5 in 5, as we move, that we can measure on an annual basis, we can measure on a quarterly basis, but more importantly, we can take decisive corrective action where we're not getting the desired results that we had actually taken around that side. Number of market intelligence report produced, this is essentially in the CSO space, to make sure that we can feed on a regular basis the market, the industry, on insights that we develop as an organization. So how do we inform the small player who does not have an economics desk, but we can give them information as to what kind of activity to expect out of China, as an example, versus India, where the growth areas are at, etc., from the perspective. The next slide. The next slide now looks at the leisure tourism marketing, and this is some of the activities that we see over there. I'll spend some time to talk about the first one, number of international tourist arrivals. Now, the world body, right, the world tourism industry grew at 7% for the 2017 year. South Africa grew at 2.4%. So we are lagging, A, in terms of world numbers growth, number one. We are also lagging our targeted growth as per the 5 in 5 over the next 5-year period. There's a couple of things I'd like to highlight basically over here. The first one, you know that the continent of Africa contributes 74% to our international arrivals. Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Lesotho combined, just those three markets, are actually larger than all of Europe and all of the US, both north and south combined. So that gives you a sense in terms of the volume and the number side. And what we saw in those three markets, that they actually pulled everyone down because collectively they only grew 0.8%. Now, if you look at outside of the continent, look everywhere else, the growth there outside of the continent has been 7.5%. So that's comparable with the global growth. So I'm basically saying because the weighted average of these big three, top three source markets for us, which basically are our neighbors, when things don't go right there, they actually suck and pull everyone down from that side. So I want to give a balanced view in terms of when you look at performance. Now that we know where the problem is at, we know where to focus, we know where to actually ramp up and pull those numbers through. And I must say, I'm speaking ahead a little bit, that I'm encouraged to see now, especially those three markets, start to turn around and make sure that the contribution basically of them starts to become something quite significant there. However, if you look at the next one that is green, is how much did these foreign tourists spend in the country? Again, what you see there, although the numbers, volume, was not what is expected, the value, those that came, actually spent more than what we expected. There, you know, you could look at a couple of things. Where depth of experiences, the number of days spent has increased relatively from what it was previously before as well, and to take into the, although the currency firmed, which made it more expensive for them to come through, they spent through basically more on that side. Important here, on the next one, geographic spread. Again, coming from the inputs and the feedback we received from this portfolio committee, a it was important that the concentration of tourism is not only in the big three or big four provinces, but to make sure all nine provinces of South Africa also get the benefit of tourism. We are moving. We are certainly moving towards a direction. Are we at the state that we want to be at? Not quite. But what we've done deliberately from our own efforts as a marketing entity, when we bring trade into the country, all of my international offices have to include another province in their campaigns and not just the big ones. We'll always lead with the ones that are iconic because those are the magnets, but we'll show that we include others in as well that start to showcase what the other provinces are at. To give a bit of an example, there is that we've got the Nelson Mandela Centenary, and what we've done around that one is say, let's come up with 100 destinations across the country and make sure there's 100 also have geographic spread, and then make them trails so that people can come and visit the Northern Cape, not to go to the Northern Cape, but to go on a Mandela trail in the Northern Cape and discover Northern Cape within there. It takes both supply side and demand side, because certainly we can drive the demand, but if there's nothing to do in the Northern Cape, if the businesses, the environment is not user-friendly for it, then we've got a bit of a problem there. But we're not standing there. We are engaging with the department itself to make sure on its destination development that they start to target or prioritize the areas that we know we've got gaps in, but also to make sure that we start to drive through new businesses from that perspective. At Indaba, unfortunately many of you could not make it, and I'm told that is one of the best Indaba that's ever happened so far, so we're really encouraged by that one. We made sure that we've got a spread of geography in terms of experiences across the board, and that became important there. The next one talks about seasonality. Again, coming from this committee that says, let's make sure that tourism jobs are not for 6 months of the year or 9 months of the year. How do we make sure that throughout the year, you know, the tourism jobs continue in that regard? So therefore, seasonality. In the green season, where we know it's low, how do we fill up the bucket? To give you a bit of an example, you know, Johannesburg typically becomes a ghost town around December, because everyone goes to the coast. So what we've done basically is to make sure that we build some activity around December, around Johannesburg, as an example, in December. We had events like Afropunk and everything else there, and what it saw now, it saw people actually starting to utilize Johannesburg in December. Strange enough that the locals were not there, but people came in and actually started to fill up those spaces. So that's how we started to think about how we fill these areas there. I'm going to combine the next two around brand positivity and brand awareness. I think the team will tell you, I think the last 2 weeks, that's all we've been talking about. And these are surveys that we do three times a year, where we do a dipstick into those markets and find out, basically, are they aware of South Africa? And if so, what's their feeling and positivity around that side? From a tourism angle. It's important to note, Chair, that we can't just look at tourism alone, because someone's feeling of a country goes beyond just tourism, but we try to look at those. So when things happen in the country that are perceived negatively, they actually have an impact on tourism. I'll give an example. The first one is around the water, right? And we know that the water crisis or water drought was focused around the Western Cape. However, especially in the international market, they look at South Africa through the lens of Cape Town. And what happens in Cape Town is almost like a proxy for the rest of the country. The second one is the land expropriation without compensation. Big, big, big conversations that are happening around the markets for us. Our trade has been asking us over and over again. No lucky guess, Australia is a big hot spot for around this side. So therefore, immediately, no matter how well we position the country, if there's a perception out there around the positivity of SA Inc., then it starts to have an impact around that side. But we're not doing anything. We're making sure that we address, we continue to bring through, and we align ourselves and coordinate with DECO, number one, and also with Brand SA to make sure that the brand South Africa itself remains intact and is also quite prolific on that side. I'm going to combine the next four ones because they're all kind of related, which is domestic tourism, number of total domestic trips, number of holiday trips, the spend on the direct trips and the spend on the holiday revenue. This has been a sore point for us as an organization, and I know also a sore point for this committee as well. What are we doing around domestic tourism? How are we trying to turn the tide? How are we making sure that we drive these activities and more and more and more from that perspective? What you've seen basically is that if you look at the total domestic trips portion, 60% of it is roughly what you call VFR, visiting friends and relatives. About 20% of that is holiday trips. 10% of it is business trips, and the rest is what you call other, basically for other reasons, basically there. We are working very hard on this one to make sure that we are driving this quite sufficiently. I hope, and I'm sure you've seen some of the work that we are doing, especially around the Short Left campaign. It's a refreshed campaign. It is also specific to the audience that we are targeting, the new young millennials who actually want to move, so that people can identify themselves as a tourism participant and not just to be on the other side. It's also important that as we target this new audience, we don't neglect what I call those ones that are traveling as well. So to balance the two, we've made sure that at our airports we become visible and also there, but not only the airports. And I'd love to hear some feedback that, you know, even around all modes of transport, taxis, buses, we are starting to make sure that we start to have branding basically on them. We've started a campaign of branding taxis long haul that are going Joburg to Cape Town, Joburg to Durban, whatever it is. I hope you start to see how we're actually featuring opportunities and in those taxis themselves to start to play video and material for people to see what role they can play around the tourism space, especially the domestic side. We've got a couple of challenges. The first one is product. And what I mean by product is that finding establishments, experiences that are actually speak to the domestic consumer content. A lot of the trade, private businesses, tend to focus on international because they can charge hard currency, dollars, euros, and pounds, and everything else. There is not much focus on domestic, right? And that becomes part of the problem there, that if we don't have enough product that is focused, solely directed towards domestic in terms of A, the experience itself, B, the price of it as well. We can speak about price, and price is a big element around travel. We have no control over how much an establishment can charge for that service for the night. But what we try to do is to make sure that we can show them the benefits basically around it and the opportunities that are there. We continue to drive this. We continue to make sure that we can showcase all of these things. Secondly as well, in our campaigns that we do, it is, again, speaking to people in a way, in a language, in a tone, and in a visible presence in a way that they can show them as being part of it. What we are seeing is that on the global total domestic numbers, those are coming down. Those are coming down quite sharply, including VFR, where people are going for weddings, people are going for funerals. That's coming down. What we're seeing on the holiday trips portion, so when you do surveys and ask people, what's your primary reason for traveling? And it's holiday trips. We're seeing those stabilize. We're seeing those start to tick up slowly, you know, just relative to last year when we do come and show you the overall year figure. It's looking good. It's looking good. So basically says, those that are traveling more, but however, those outside of the traveling audience are actually quite equipped there. We did an exercise to look at it deeper, so who are we actually talking to? Out of a population of, say, 55 million people, we really expensive, okay, who's there? Take out under 18, but that's not who we're speaking to. Took them out over there. Take out those that don't earn an income. Take them out over there. Let's include those that actually earn 5,000 and more. We said 5,000 is probably the mark that we could start to look at whom we're actually speaking to in that regard. The number we came up to was about 5.8 million people. That's essentially 5.8 million people actually earn 5,000 and more that we could look at and think that's the population that we're talking to. So that now that we're getting more scientific in terms of driving domestic tourism, making sure that we start to pinpoint where it is, it becomes important. In our transformation space, as we introduce new players in, we want them to bring in products and experiences that actually are currently not marketed. We want them to bring in rural tourism. We want them to bring in township tourism. We want to bring them all of those elements out there that are not packaged at the moment. SA Tourism does not package. We create the platform for the packagers. The gap that we've seen is that we want to bring in people who package deliberately for the domestic market. The temptation is to always default to international. That work is going on, and it's an area that certainly myself and the executive team are always looking at and make sure that we drive on that side. Now here, it's a ripple down effect. You get the tourism numbers domestic incorrect, the amount spent is also becomes incorrect in that perspective. And it's, again, it's an area that we're looking at quite closely to make sure that we can drive on that side. Geographic spread and seasonality are areas, again, that we've said we want to showcase not the obvious places. And in our short-lived campaigns, I hope you've also seen, we're showing new experiences, different experiences that people can engage in, looking right across the year as an example, whereby in winter season, typically the numbers go down. We want to make sure that the price becomes variable. And this goes to what we call interaction with the trade, where we say to them, instead of charging your high prices, how about you have off-seasonal prices that you have and start to come in that regard. So we're trying to use all our instruments available, whether it's a JMA, joint marketing agreement, that says, well, let's help you to show you what the opportunity is and what's available basically out there. More importantly, also linking up with the provincial tourism authorities and local tourism authorities to make sure that they've got capacity and enablement in that regard. I'm going to go to program 4, page 10, slide 10, business events. We've met 4 out of 6 of the targets, KPIs there, APPs. The first 2 ones are not yet due for reporting, but I'm confident that these will turn green. Happiness, the indications, so far is that we are above target in terms of the number of business events hosted and the number of international hosted delegates, important that we're driving through on that side. Number of bids supported for international and regional business events. Again, this is to the smaller geographical areas that are not in the what we call the big three of Cape Town, Joburg, and Durban, where the big ICCs are at. But to start to look at other provinces, Kimberley, as an example, has an ICC that is much smaller, but we're driving specific events and activities on that side. What we do is we drive this by the level of support we give gets enhanced if we are moving towards the places that actually don't have much activity. But then again, all of these efforts can really be pulled back or thwarted or slowed down once you have a national carrier like SA Express pull out. Suddenly now, connectivity to Kimberley is not 3 times a day, but once a day, as an example. That puts pressure on how you can move people across the board. So it becomes important that we tie together the entire ecosystem, and one areas of connectivity that impact can have an impact right across the board. Because it's one thing to say we want to have the conference in Kimberley, but if you can't connect to Kimberley, then it becomes a problem and a challenge basically from that side. Market access platforms, very, very important. That we become very deliberate. Do we go to all the international trade platforms that are there? Surely we can't. But let's choose the ones that actually talk to the business that we have at hand, to the areas that we've identified in 5 and 5. So that becomes important there. Number of provincial signature events. Again, a call out from this committee that says work together with the provinces, work together with the local entities out there. Identify events that actually act as a draw card to bring people to travel to those spaces, both from a domestic space and international as well, regional, international. And we've done a couple of those together with the provinces. The province will always own the event, but we can magnify it. We can take an event that is happening in a certain district and make it visible through Germany, as an example, through our German effort. We can make it visible in the US or whatever it is. So that becomes quite important there. We've managed to align all of the provinces to 5 in 5 because they all now all understand what their contribution and role is basically to 5 in 5 in that regard. So we have achieved 4 out of 6 of the KPIs from that side. And then the last KPI of our total of 33 is the tourist experience. And this is really about quality assurance, more than just looking at grading, but looking right across the board. I alluded to this one, and this is a conversation that we've had before in this portfolio committee around grading, right? That we are still two things. We are still, the technology, the disruption space, the shared economy has overtaken our value proposition in this space. It is now an opportunity to refresh, to hit the refresh button and say, well, what do we want to achieve from graded establishments, from graded rooms? Where are we achieving them as an example? Let me give you an example of what is basically happening at the moment. We've seen a lot of establishments that were previously registered as a B&B, deregister as a B&B, and they rather go, two things happen. One, they deregister from being a business, so the rates and taxes now become local residential rates and taxes. And we know the difference will become threefold, 1,000 rands versus 3,000 rands. The second thing they would do then is now enlist with the likes of Airbnb, right? Because now they can enlist with them, there are no formal requirements in terms of that they should fulfill. So guess what happens? There's no overhead costs, and basically what happens is as and when people book, that's when the activity starts to pick up from that perspective. We have been having many conversations with NDT itself as the policymakers and policy drivers, and I'm very encouraged to say that they submitted basically for submission and comment around not necessarily how you regulate, but how do you level the playing field. A, we're starting to see a turn around business to say, well, they are not anti-Airbnb, but they just want to have the same rules and the same opportunities that they do. So therefore, as an example, one of the things that says, if you let out your house for more than 10 days a month, you are deemed a business. And when you are deemed a business, you pay business rates and taxes. If you let it out for less than 10 days a month, well, you're just having friends over, as an example. So what it does then is to make sure that if you are trading as a business, that you are actually at the same level playing field as a registered business down the road from that side. So there's quite an advancement and key from that side. The other thing as well is to also update the elements that we also verify as a grading council. Previously, things like a bath, you know, if you didn't have a bath, you were not five-star. But we live in an environment where there's a water issue. So therefore, is a bath still relevant as something to say, well, if you don't have one? So new establishments will not put in a bath, as an example. They put in a shower. So therefore, we've got to modify some of those things. You know, other one included, I think, was something like a TV, if you didn't have a TV. But we know that people pay a lot of money not to have a TV in their rooms. You know, so therefore, that's no longer a criteria to be put into the mix from that perspective. Then we also start to look at the operating model itself. Because what we have at the moment, we have assessors who actually like inspectors, but they're also originators as well. So we're looking at opportunities in terms of how do we surround ourselves with youth-owned businesses that can start to become our marketing agency and start to market, you know, the benefits of grading, and then get the assessors to actually do the assessments themselves as well. Also important to note, we've got an illegal stars problem, meaning that I could have been graded 5 years ago, but the signage or the plaque does not have an expiry date. You as a consumer walk in there, you see a plaque and you think it's up to date, however it's not. So we're looking at removing illegal stars, because if your neighbor's got an illegal star, you've got a valid star, but yet they're also benefiting from it, that becomes a problem. So how do you remove this? It's a criminal offense, but believe me, we've reported to the police, and I understand fully where they're coming from. In the list of priorities of a cash heist, as an example, are they going to go after that, or are they going to go take down stars? And I think that's the element that we have to start to look at now in terms of how we address it there. So that is a Q4 out of all the 33 KPIs that we have. It's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag of things that we are really proud that we've delivered, that we've worked hard on. There are still some sticky elements that keep us awake at night. Brand positivity, brand awareness is important, especially in the global space, to make sure we get that right. Domestic tourism features front and center. We'll continue to drive that. And there's a fully-fledged team that is actually focusing around that side, embedding the new operating model that is going to give us the results and the nimbleness that we need to make sure that we fill our vacancies. And again, I'm very proud that at least on a global level, we're onboarding about 5 people a month. Then something I'm also very proud to also talk about, it's not included in here, is our internship program. I think I was asked the other time, what are you doing around youth? How are you bringing them into the space there? We've got a 24-month internship program that we have launched. We went out on a call. We received something like, I think we had something like 8 positions available. We received 3,500 submissions. That just goes to show 2 things. One is the desirability of SA Tourism as an employer, but also secondly as well, the level of desperateness that's out there for people to want to come and have jobs, right? The first batch came through, I think, 2 weeks ago, we're restarting the organization. We want to grow that. We really want to bring experiences to youth as well. It's a 2-year program. Depending on how you perform the first year, you migrate into the second year as well. But there's also opportunities, more importantly, and we're going to work this out in the detail, to make sure that we give international exposure. So how do we take some of our interns who in the last 6 months of the internship throw them in our India market for 3 months, throw them in our New York office for 2 months, in our Berlin, I mean our Frankfurt office or an Australia office. That's the opportunity that we have. And we're not just only creating skills for SA Tourism. It's for the industry. It's for the country. In fact, I always encourage people, the more people start to call people in this organization, start to poach them, it's a very good indication that actually we are recognized as a very good source for our skills base and for the exposure that we have to the environment. From slide 11 onwards is really the detailed portion around where we are at in terms of, they link back to those 33. So the front end became the summary, and that's the detail around this. So I'm not going to go line by line, but I'll probably highlight the ones that are important and are glaring at us. I'll start to the percentage vacancy rate maintained. Again, there, it's our annual target is 7%. Our vacancy is about 13%. It's coming down quite significantly. We want to make sure we bring people in as quickly as possible, but we're not compromising on the quality and standard of people that are bringing through. I'm very happy to announce that the caliber and quality of people bringing in are really, people are really excited to be part of SA Tourism and really start to contribute towards our growth from that perspective there. The other one is a migration of staff into the new structure. Is again, there's just one person that we want to bring from what you call the pool to bring through on that side. Key to note here is that we've got a new, what you call a hub head, a country manager for China, right? China is one of those markets that keep the COO awake, not only at night, but during the day and everything else there. The world is winning on China. China is the world's largest source market. Everyone has a China strategy. Our neighbors, even on the continent, have double-digit growth on China. We are going backwards. Last year, for the entire year, we are 17% down on China. That's really got to ring the alarm bells over there. So we're really having a deep dive approach to look at China. And when you look at China, we've got a new, what I call country manager, a hub head, that has been put in that place. New, fresh ideas, and he's really, I must say, embracing it, you know, from that perspective. The COO and team are also looking at practically how do we start to win with China over there. There's a whole myriad of elements that are important there, starting from visas. To give you a bit of an example, I had the office from China call me in a frantic last week. There's a conference where 1,250 Chinese people are attending. 20%, but 253 of them had not received their visas. Right, so that's money on the table we're leaving behind. So therefore, there's no alignment between our element to process visas, the speed with which we can process visas, and the agency we can get this done, that becomes a difference in approach there. Nigeria is another example, whereby the visa processing space, call it the embassy in Nigeria, has a target of 35,000 per annum. Right? So when Nigeria DECO office reaches 35,000 visas, they celebrate, they've reached their numbers. Our numbers are 85,000. So do you see the gap basically sitting over there that says, well, don't stop now, we've got another 50,000 to go. We are losing market share from over there. Dubai, as an example, is now giving Nigerians visas on arrival. We don't do that. So therefore, people travel to the route of least resistance, basically over there. And just to echo what the minister has been saying over and over again, to give an example, Russia lifted visa waiver, 50% uplift over there. Yes, it's coming from a small base. And by the way, this is not the market we actively market in. You know, so please, we're not laying claim that we did a fantastic job, but just removing the barrier just gives you that immediate uplift. New Zealand, in a market we've been in for years, we slapped visas in, 24% drop that you start to see over there. We encourage what you see around Angola as an example, we've got a visa waiver. But just to give context, when we announced that we got a visa waiver with Angola, Kenya and Rwanda announced that no visas for the entire African continent into those markets. You don't need visas. You get visa on arrival and it's free. So I'm just trying to give you a sense that the world is not standing still. It's moving actually quicker than what we can respond around that side. But the ministry and together with the minister, I'm very much assured, engaging to make sure that SA Inc. starts to get the story aligned basically around removing the barriers that are there, around removing some of the obstacles that we put in place. And the bridge certificates is one of them. It's about interpretation more than anything else, right? Yes, we don't want child trafficking but at the same time, no other country does. We want to make sure that we're consistent with it. So instead of seeing families arrive, you know, four people, six people, we're seeing adults arrive without their children. Because, again, around the unapproved certificates issue that become an element on that side. I'm now going to go to slide number 18, basically. Just talk about program three around the tourism marketing side. Again, there, I've spoken about it earlier on in terms of how we are falling behind a little bit. And again, there, as I said, though we call them the gorilla markets. You know, when they cough, those three markets, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Lesotho, it moves our numbers the whole opposite way. What are we doing? Excitingly, we have what we call, as part of our plans for this year, a ports of entry refurbishment exercise. So we're going to go to all of these ports of entry, not just the airports alone, but the land-based ones. And we are going to be refreshing the outlook of those ports of entry. How do we make them welcoming? How do we make them basically centers where people can kind of feel comfortable to be processed in? How do we also work with our Home Affairs staff so they can do their job with joy a little bit more, so that they can start to get the frequencies or the efficiencies up? Instead of processing 10 people an hour, maybe 20 people an hour, as an example. So we are really looking at focusing on them as well. We also have later on this year, I think in August, September, the Lily Zella Awards. And in part of those awards, we've got a category. They call it the I Do Tourism Award. It is actually an award we want to recognize those that are outside of the tourism sector, but actually play an important role, and we recognize them. We want to start recognizing the immigration officers, as an example, who've done a fantastic job. We want to recognize those petrol attendants who take the time to give directions without the reward, as an example. We want to recognize, and I'm sure you've seen this on social media, the cabin attendant who took a baby and stepped around herself and really just walked around the airplane. That's going above and beyond the duty, and that's how we showcase ourselves as a welcoming nation and stuff like that. So we try to say that some of the areas that we have will need other players to come through and actually assist us in terms of achieving those numbers there. As I said, I'm happy to kind of look forward in for specifically Zimbabwe. They had currency issues at that time. Now there's starting to be more currency available. Mozambique, we've seen those numbers tick up as well now, and Lesotho as well. So you start to stabilize. The rest of the world, we are comfortable. The only areas I'm worried about is China, as I said, right? China is the world's largest source market. The second largest source market of the world is India. We only grew 0.8% out of India. That's worrying as well. Again, visa issues sitting over there that will start need to come through on that side. Very happy with Europe. In fact, it was one of our star performers. Germany grew 12% year on year, which is really encouraging. The US, 7.8%. South America, what's the ridiculous figure? 54% or something that grew up on that side. That's from a low base. But what you saw there in the South America, you got a new airline, a low-cost airline, starting to fly between South Africa and there. And you start to see the numbers start to move up quite nicely. So very, very encouraged there. I worry about Nigeria. We're losing market share there. And when I speak to the office over there, the economy is still tight. But they've seen that the number of outbound travel has decreased, right? But however, we are still losing market share out of those ones that are decreasing into other areas. So that becomes important. So we're starting to look broadly now in terms of what kind of partnerships that we have. We partnered with Standard Bank and ICBC to start to look at the China market, as an example. We all know that the Chinese credit cards don't work in South Africa because they're a different platform. But ICBC is the world's largest bank and also owns 20% of Standard Bank. So we're starting to do deals there that you can have a card issued in China that is working basically in South Africa as well. So we bought a branded card that has got South African tourism logo with it together with the world's largest bank, not paying a cent, but leveraging, you know, our destination, leveraging our brand and everything else there. And that's something quite significant that is really helping us to make sure that the tourism message is spread beyond just the obvious, our efforts alone. And then I will close off and hand over basically to the CEO, just to take us through on the human capital side. I'll hand over to Tom CFO, to talk through on the finance side in terms of where our numbers are at, and I'll hand over to CEO to talk about the human capital, and then Basti, if there's anything else there, and then we can close off and hand back. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I am on slide 35. To start, I think I need to just explain that the first column is the budget that we have received, and also then the second column was more the adjustments, as I think this portfolio committee has also requested we need to report on the adjustments that we've received. I will come to it now. And then we've got the adjusted budget, and then we've got the expenditure. So if one look at the first, the grants that we have received, our grants we have received from the initial grant from the national, or a transfer, let me not use the word grant, but a transfer from the National Department of Tourism was 1.13 billion rand. There was an agreement between South African Tourism and the National Department of Tourism that 5 million rand needs to be reverted back to them for domestic tourism activities. So we have transferred that money through the Treasury, we follow the process, and we have transferred that money back to the National Department of Tourism. So that's why there's 5 million less in terms of the government grant. So we have received all the money from the National Department of Tourism. If I go to the Tomsa levies, one will see of notice that the Tomsa levies were 124 million rand as budgeted for. But if one go to the revenue, total revenue, the revenue column, one will notice that there is an amount of 142 million rand. And the reason for that is that, as I've explained previously to this committee, that 15% of our transfers that we receive from the Tomsa levies is earmarked for a collaborative fund where the industry has input into with us and the industry to service the market. So 15% of the money received from Tomsa is then for the collaborative fund. So that the total amount received from the Tomsa is 142 million rand. In Durban Meetings Africa, the planned income was 63 million rand. We had it in, remember this is the fourth quarter, we had it in February. The amount for Meetings Africa has not been included as yet because we were waiting for an audit outcome, as I've reported to the committee previously, that we audit all of Indaba and Meetings Africa we are auditing. So in the final financial statements, we will have those figures included in the expenditure or the revenue from the Indaba Meetings Africa platform. Grading fees, I think also as the CEO has indicated, there was a decline in grading. It was 4%, so the revenue is also kind of a 4% that we have received less. I must say that what helped us a lot here is also the TIP money, the Tourism Investment Program from the NDT, where we subsidized in some instances up to 90% of the graded establishments if they comply with the relevant requirements for grading. So sundry revenue, if we look at the adjustments, is quite a huge amount. It's 109 million rand. Remember, after we have submitted financial statements and there's a surplus in financial statements, we need to approach the Treasury to utilize that surplus. We had the Treasury agreed to approve the 99 million rand surplus, and then just over 9.5 million rand was for the TIP funding for accredited establishments. So the total adjustment was 104 million rand. So our total revenue budget was 1.468 million rand. I think that is the revenue side. So we are quite well on the revenue side. If I turn over to the next page and we go to the expenditure of the budget, I think this is a different programs. As I said, this is provisional figures. It's not a final figures. We are at a 96% spending, and the reason for the other 4% is that some of them are non-cash items like depreciation we have not included as yet, leave provisions, and also the post-retirement valuation was not received at the time. So the post-retirement, all of those has been included in financial statements, and our spending is quite good in that regard. I think that so the 4% has been kind of cancelled. We will spend 100% of our money, almost 100% of our money. Included in Program 3, I think there was also a request from this the portfolio committee that we need to also indicate what was the amount for domestic tourism. I have made a note about domestic tourism, and it was 147 million rand, and the actual spending was 140 million rand. As I said, we are still waiting for the final figures. Why is it so high in terms of the We Do Tourism as part of the 99 million rand? Some money was allocated to domestic tourism to support the We Do Tourism project, and that's why we have increased that amount. So that was a once-off. We will fall back this year to a lesser amount. I think if we turn over to the budget expenditure per economic classification, compensation of employees, the budget in total was 163 million rand. We have, after the redesign of the organization, we have allocated, as I've explained in the quarter three report, we've allocated 34 million rand to cover all the positions, which brought us up to 198 million rand. But there was a moratorium. If you look at expenditures, it was 161 million rand. There was a moratorium placed on all vacancies until the total redesign and the Project Unite was finalized, implemented, and as the CEO said, we're starting to appointing people now, so that money in the new year will definitely reduce. But our total expenditure was 161 million rand, and the reason for that was the moratorium that was on the personnel that we had. I think the CEO will talk to that. We've got 202 positions approved, and we cannot exceed those 202 positions. Goods and services is 1.177 billion rand that we've budgeted. We've added 70 million rand to that from the funds that we have received from the Treasury, approved by the Treasury, the surplus, and then the total amount was 1.2 billion rand. There is a graphical slide that I've presented, and it's also later there is a kind of a breakdown of all the marketing expenditure. Still, perhaps as always, as we said, our mandate, we want to support our mandate. 78% of our budget is going to marketing and 22% is going to overheads, of which 12% is for personnel. So really our personnel budget, we try to maintain that on a level where we can spend our money on marketing as we've discussed. I think the capital assets, as we've reported, also it's not huge amounts. That the saving, the reason for the machinery and equipment that we have not spent at a time is because we are busy with the planned office space planning. We cannot start unless we have done the proper, we have done the first phase of the space planning. The second phase is in now to do the construction of the space planning and to make provision for all the incumbents that is appointed at the organization. Software and intangibles, I think we've overspent a bit there. And the reason for that is, well, what we have done is there was an HR module. Also, we tried to integrate all systems. One of, I think, the success factors of a matrix system is that we must have proper systems. And we have the first phase of that was the HR modules that we've implemented and also the contract management system, because contract management system is kind of very crucial in a matrix system. So we have budgeted for a contract management system. I think if we go to the next slide, that is just a breakdown. I think that is self-explanatory. Marketing and media is the highest, 35%. Production is 12%. Activation is 16%. And I think the rest is a smaller amount. But that's the total amount for our marketing. I think, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the breakdown, as requested in the past also, this is only the breakdown of the marketing expenditure. In some of the instances we have overspent, some of them we have underspent, but what we do right at the end of the year, we do reallocations in terms of the different lines, marketing lines, to make sure that we do not violate the rules of the PFMA. So in total we have spent 94% at the end of the fourth quarter for the marketing goods and services expenditure. I think where we are now, Chair, is that we have finalized the financial statements. We have submitted the financial statements as requested on the 31st of May to the Auditor General, and all of those provisions that we have not provided for at the time is included. So When we present the annual financial statements, you will see a different figure from where we are now. I think, Chair, this Honourable Chair and members, this is the financial presentation.
Thank you, CFO. Steph, can I ask you to just take us through on the human capital side?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm on slide 41. The CEO has already mentioned that this is an area which we actually monitor on a monthly basis. You'd remember, committee members, is when we introduced our Project Ignite, the workforce profile showed that we had number of vacancies, which we obviously have had frozen and filled with contract employees and fixed-term contracts to ensure that we actually implement Project Ignite. I'm happy to mention that if you look at that slide, it talks to as the end of March 2018, but where we're sitting right now, we're sitting with about 16 vacancies. Just March alone, we've done a recruitment of about nine new employees. We're onboarding nine new employees. And like the CEO said, if you look at the slide, under internship, we only had one. We have now onboarded about seven interns in that space. I think notable for the committee to just bear in mind is from a marketing, destination marketing point of view and, you know, from a global operations point of view, we've just recruited for China, and we also recruited for India. Both the candidates would, or the incumbents, will obviously be posted in market, I think, by the 1st of July. The other markets which we're busy recruiting for, or we're just waiting for ministers' concurrence, is for Nigeria and South Europe. Like the CEO said, Nigeria is one of the critical markets that we're looking at in the continent. In fact, it's one of the biggest economies that we want to tap into in terms of our Africa air arrivals. The other big market, which honorable members should note, is that in the U.S. we have a vacancy, not yet a vacancy. I think the current country manager will be exiting the market in August. We've started that recruitment process. U.S., like I said, I think in the last portfolio committee, is one of those developing markets which we think we barely scratched the surface, and we can't afford to let it be vacant. So we've started that process of recruitment so that we onboard whoever the incumbent is. So in terms of our workforce profile, I think we're quite comfortable that we've done everything to try and close the vacancy rate. And in terms of our project plan, we think that by end of September, we should have closed all the vacancies. The next slide talks to employment equity updates. We're happy to say this is one of the things that, as the executive team, we monitor quite closely. South African tourism is on par with the industry, but most importantly, the public service itself. And I think in the past couple of years, we used to use the provincial EAP guidelines, but now we use the national ones in pursuing this employment equity target. And for us to maintain this, during the entire recruitment drive post Project Ignite, we monitored it closely. So it actually informed how we recruited, especially the new recruits that are coming into the organization, just to close the gaps. I'm on slide 43. Slide 43 is just really a reminder of why we did the organizational review project. You would remember, Honorable Chair and members, there was a ministerial review which related to how the organization was structured and how the human capital within the business was managed. So those are some of the key priorities that the ministerial review actually outlined for us to actually take up as the leadership. On slide 44 is just a summary of key activities that we've now completed by quarter four. So you would remember that we kick-started this project in May 2016, but if you look at where we are, January 2017 to March 2018, we have done a project closure, and most of the projects that we're now doing are part of business as usual. The only three key areas that the committee should note is we're now busy filling the vacancies, the 16 vacancies that I've mentioned earlier, and that's a bit dated. With the recent numbers, we only have 16, and we're saying that the recruitment process would be completed by end of 2018, September. The next slide, slide 45, basically is just an update of what are some of the human capital projects that we were delivering. You'd remember part of the ministerial review showed a weakness in how in staff engagement. Therefore, one of the things that we did was to develop a human capital strategy to address some of those things. One of the key areas to assist us, particularly in achieving our 5 in 5 goal, was how do we create a high-performance team in the organization. So those are some of the things that we are now dealing with, and we will be bedding down and implementing in 2018 and 19. So I'm not sure if you want me to switch to the governance area, or you would take that one. Okay. So the next slide, Honourable Chair and members, it just shows the quarterly attendance of our board members in quarter four. All the committees in line with our board charters and the governance protocol that we put in place have met. And slide 48 talks to the attendance of each and every board member. This is the outgoing board that ended on the 31st of May. It just shows you who sits in which committee. And slide 49 covers the board remuneration, which mainly is around the board fees and other miscellaneous like flights and accommodation and car hire. So that's the governance part.
Thank you very much, Sio. Honourable Chair, this is the last page of our presentation. We have what we call attached annexes, and they just give more detail and more explanation. So we sometimes, what we feel sometimes see that even if we do put in acronyms and we put what the abbreviation means, but it's important to get explanation. What is VFR, as an example? So there it goes in a bit more details to make sure that when we do throw these acronyms and though we give the definition of them, we understand basically what lies behind it there. And also gives a bit of insights in terms of some of the pieces, more linking specifically things like at provincial level. So we start to talk domestic tourism, which provinces are doing well, which ones are not doing well, and that's included within some of those annexures, you know. And again, it's more for content so that it informs what's in front of the document itself. So with that said, I think we are fairly comfortable as an entity, as an organization, that we are on top of things. We constantly always try to eke out more efficiency for the system, make sure that we can do better, to focus on specific areas, and then ultimately so that we can also deliver on our APPs as well. We are also always looking at the APPs themselves. Are they appropriate in terms of giving an indication of how well the organization is doing as well? So those will always kind of be eked out and make sure that we can deliver in that regard. I want to thank you for your support from the members as well, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk about our organization and the work that we have achieved. And I'm very happy for the team and I to take questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO and your team. Before I take questions from... let me take questions from honourable members. I note you, Honourable Kronborg, followed by Honourable P. Adams, followed by Honourable Forth in that sequence. And then I'll take the next set of hands. That will start with Honourable Komo. Yes, I note.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I'd like to draw a couple of threads through some of these pages and link up to some of the comments that were made. So if I could start on page 9. And I think we could take it as a point of departure for the committee that as important as many of these strategic objectives are, the object surely is to make sure that they all contribute to growing the number of tourists both visiting us from overseas, international tourists, and then promoting domestic tourism. Because if any of these other objectives don't actually contribute towards that, then there's no real point in having them. So I want to start on page 9 because in the KPIs which are listed in green and red there, there was a very interesting statement made that the bulk of international tourists are from those three neighboring states, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Lesotho. And if that market sneezes, then the entire international tourist market catches a cold, so to speak. And bearing in mind that 3/4 then of our market comes from that source, and most of that is not necessarily high-spending international arrivals, Angola's generally been mentioned as an African country that does have a lot of petrodollars, and that might be something of an exception. That may not remain the same with the kleptocracy of Eduardo dos Santos now coming to an end. It seems to be more of an egalitarian society being created by the new president, so perhaps the high spenders won't be quite as great a number. But it does beg the question then whether, in fact, our largest market is our most profitable market. And it would appear that, generally speaking, some of the other international tourists could probably spend much more per capita than our three biggest markets within the 75%. And I say that because if you look at the green KPIs that have been achieved, it says percentage, the second one says percentage geographic spread of international tourist arrivals, which has been marked as an objective that's been achieved. Now, the problem with this presentation today is there's very few numbers in these sections. So I don't quite know what the target was that was achieved. But I'd like you to comment on how we are perhaps shifting our focus to more high-spending international arrivals, what those targets might be, and whether I'm correct in saying that is a desirable objective, bearing in mind that's where more of the high spenders are, could have a greater impact on our economy. That's the first thing. Then on that same page, some of the reds, the percentage brand positivity. And you say in your reasons for deviation that the brand positivity was negatively impacted by the number of incidents of crime against tourists. I think we all understand that, but what we don't actually know is the numbers. And I think that particular statement and that particular slide does cry out for that, because if we could measure just how much the brand positivity has slumped. Now, we do have measurements, because I've looked this up before and I've asked parliamentary questions before. It actually gives a number, which is a statistic. But more importantly, I believe, through you, Chair, is that if we could link that number to what the percentage is or the rand impact is. So say, for example, your brand positivity drops by half. Can we link that to a decline in the number of tourists arriving due to that factor? One would then have to isolate the other factors and just measure that particular thing. So if some Dutch tourist or German tourist gets mugged and that country's tourism outbound figures into our country declines as a result, we should be able to measure, because we do have the average stay and we do have the average spend per day. We should be able to measure the economic impact on that and how much that is costing the country in terms of rand spent, and therefore the 30-odd percent that would generally flow into the fiscus as a result of that particular tourist, and then a multiple of that, depending on how big the decline is, the losses we sustain. And I say that because surely the Portfolio Committee on Tourism would like to be able to say, this is what, for example, inadequate policing or not enough care being taken to ensure the safety of foreign tourists is costing us, and that could actually motivate better cooperation between this committee and safety and security, so that if we can actually prove that it has a huge effect on the welfare of the country as a whole because of that slump in positivity, which leads to a slump in arrivals, which leads to a slump in employment and income, we could maybe have a better coordination to look after our international tourists. Okay, if I then move to page 19 with those comments in mind, and it's an interesting point which has been the case now for a couple of years and it's been flagged in the EPCs and budget debates. What you say in your reasons for deviation column is that the revenue exceeded the target from international tourist arrivals and on average they're staying longer, okay, which is a trend that's been around now, that although and including domestic tourism, we have less people traveling. Those that are traveling are spending more. And so the increase in spend and the increase in bed nights is more than offsetting the decline in volume. That's actually what's happened. And from an international tourist point of view, I would suggest, and I'd like you to comment on this, that that's precisely why those figures on slide 9 are so important, because if in fact fewer people are generating more money, surely we should be directing our efforts to those markets where they come from, because there's a tacit acceptance of that fact on page 19, that in fact those people that do write from those sources, both within and without the country, or outside the country, actually contribute a lot more. So we surely should be going for the high rollers and the high spenders and actually make that stat work in our favour. Then my last comment, Chair, is on domestic tourism generally, and it goes back to my opening comments about where do all these key performance indicators lead us, because we still have a problem with domestic tourism. And the last time we had a presentation on that, there was a fairly bewildering slide using words that I've never actually understood, talking about a need to do a deep dive, sounds a bit like an aquatic thing, into the stats, and there was other strange words used, which basically in simple English said, we don't really understand our market. That's what that slide actually said. And it indicated the need for further research into what drives spending, what drives certain patterns of consumer behavior within domestic tourism, what drives visiting friends and relatives. I think some of you will remember that particular slide that was promoted, and fairly arcane marketing terms were used to describe the fact, or disguise the fact, to use other words, that we didn't really understand our market. And that's still having an impact on domestic tourism today, because we are still struggling there, as I think we all know. And hence my last question to you is, bearing in mind the stats you put on page 9 about domestic tourism as well as international arrivals, how far are we down the road in this dive? I hope the air in Aqualung hasn't dried up. And have we got to the facts, and have we uncovered those nuggets of information that we've been hunting for, to use your metaphor? Do we know what's really going on, and have we conducted that research? What is that research telling us?
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the family SAT for your presentation. And Chairperson, I must say, I thought I would hear the new board chairperson. My first question to him would be, did he receive a legacy report? And what did it entail? What challenges are there, and how would you want to mitigate that challenges? And I will start from the last page, Chairperson, where the CFO, on governance. Chairperson, we have a slide there on board meetings and things like that, and on slide 49, there's a breakdown of costs. Remuneration, flights, accommodation, and car hire. You see, Chairperson, we shouldn't just let go things on finance. I'd like to know these flights that are paid for, where to, from A to B, and that. And the following question that I want to ask the new Chairperson of the board is, it was a practice in the former board that they have a meeting and they do all their committee meetings on 1 or 2 days. Now, in your legacy report, there must be something said about the practicality and the impact of that. And how do you want to do that? Do you want to do it in the same way? Will it be practical? Will it be effective to do it in the same way? Now, Chairperson, my question is on page 9. And with regard to Program 3, Leisure and Tourism Marketing, because, Chairperson, CEO, this is your core business, marketing. But you have only achieved, Chairperson, through you, 5 out of 12 KPIs. Not even 50%. Is that value for money? I know you have listed here for us, green and red. And you know, Chairperson, I would like the CEO to be more precise with regard to percentage, this number of this, say this number, this percentage. And I was specifically talking to this market of Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and Mozambique. You said you are going for volume and value. Does this volume, because you say, I think 70% you said, comes from that region, is it necessarily value? And what we are so privileged, Jefferson, that we have a variety of neighbors. And I'm specifically thinking of Namibia and Botswana. And in a way also Angola. What is SAT doing to also increase the volume of visitors from those neighboring countries? And as we can almost say, Namibia is the second South Africa, because they've got our time, they have a rand, but it's almost the same value as ours. Now, Chairperson, on slide 9, there is a remark made. Kenya and Nigeria saw notable declines in brand positivity. Now, it's all about perceptions. What is done? What interventions? And I would like the CEO to name them. But not to name them. Just tell me the outcome. Because we must always, when there is an intervention, measure the outcome. Otherwise, it won't be value for money. On page 10, also on business events, you say you support international and regional business events. Now, we know that the business events are almost all directed towards the three provinces, KZN, Western Cape, and Gauteng. I would like you to be specific. Say that business event was in Eastern Cape. Number of delegates. The other question coupled with this, Chairperson, what does SAT do to convert business tourism into leisure tourism? You see, if there is a business event, are you present there? Physically, warm bodies. Do you speak to the delegates? And what are you presenting to them? Chairperson, and then on the Chinese visitors, the number that declined. And it is said that they appointed a hub head. And you know, one of the challenges is the visa, but we will have to live with our challenges and overcome our challenges. Is there a specific mandate that this habit must try to realize? Because we need the Chinese. We need them. We need their money. And then, Chairperson, on the finances, the grading fees. No. My first question there is under Program 3 in Durban and Meetings Africa. Then the budgeted AENE budgeted for 63 million, ne? only 43 revenue was raised, but because the auditing was not is not done yet. In future, Chairperson, why can't the CFO subdivide it so that we can see which of these main events is the most successful financially and how can we improve on that? Then my very, very last one, Chairperson, that is on slide 36 and that is the program 5 visitor experience. Now, 94% targets was not achieved, but 94% of the allocated budget was spent. So, I can derive, did we get value for money?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to pick up on the business and leisure travel, it is so that the business traveller spends about 3 times more than its leisure traveller before actually converting. And I think the point has been made previously that we need to focus more on that conversion. We know that the Cape Town-Johannesburg flight path is the 9th busiest in the world, and most of those flights are filled with business travellers. Dare I say, maybe government even, but that is the dynamics at play in terms of having, Parliament here and most government departments need to travel up and down. But I think the business traveller in that category, we certainly need to focus on that conversion much more. So I'm eager to hear what plans are being developed, specifically focusing on the business traveller, domestic, but then also in terms of the conversion from conferences. We know that in 2017, more than 1 million people attended conferences in South Africa, and I think there is also a great opportunity for conversion. And I've made the point also previously that there are delegate boosting programs being developed locally, but what is SAT doing? I think it would be a good opportunity for you to share your plans in terms of that strategy, because there's certainly a lot of scope if we do that type of delegate boosting across all provinces, so that it's not only in one place only. I know you are doing a lot of work in that space, but I think it's good to share the work that you are doing. Tourist safety has been spoken about already by my colleague here, Honourable Krumbok, but I want to ask you, CEO, and I'm sure that you speak at a lot of places where you need to promote South Africa, so you appear on many platforms. So when you're asked a question about tourist safety, would you agree that perhaps the time is ready for us to have a tourist police? Because some other countries are doing that, and it instills a lot of confidence amongst travellers. And it's not only necessarily for international, but also for domestic. I think there's also that perception that it's not safe to travel in certain places. We have to break down those barriers. We have to get into every part of the country if we want to get that culture of travel. So what are your thoughts on the tourist police, and is it something worth exploring? And I'm sure having a chief strategy officer amongst you, I think it's something that we certainly need to research, because we're getting a lot of bad publicity. And in many cases, perhaps unwarranted, but again, perceptions, and the tourist police or even a call center or whatever. But let's talk about that. The recent VAT increase and now the very big fuel hike increase certainly impacts on the ability of South Africans to travel. Would we consider perhaps an incentive travel approach? Because it's very, very expensive for people now to travel. So not even looking at the household budget in terms of what is available to families, this is just going to make it even more difficult. So your whole 5 in 5 strategy, I fully support it, but I'm concerned we're not going to meet our targets because of external impacts. So what are we doing here in the middle?
Then on international travel, you spoke a lot about the visa on arrival, but not so much on the e-visa. That is something that I certainly believe is something that we need to celebrate. There's a pilot project being rolled out, and I know it's something which is out of our hands. It's with the Department of Home Affairs, but certainly it impacts on travel. So again, the marketing around e-visa, what are we going to do once those pilot projects are being rolled out and so on? How will we be communicating with our key source markets and other markets on the benefits of e-visa? The chief financial officer spoke about 77% on marketing. It's a lot of money. I think you get around about a billion rand. So it's about 770 million rand for marketing. These advertisements that we see on television, the recent one, I like it. It's this family sliding down the dune, going on a quad, jumping from tree to tree. It's fantastic, but is it speaking to actual destination marketing? In other words, real experiences that speaks to real places and dealing with the affordability issue in it. So it's a great advertisement, but we are not highlighting actual destinations. In other words, real places where real people can go to. So these advertisements are obviously being developed by firms that we appoint, and I'll come to that later on. I just want to ask that I think we need to change our marketing perhaps if we want to speak to our domestic market, because those advertisements really showcase the villages in Mpumalanga where you can do homestays, or the Northern Cape where you can go on hiking trails into those far remote places, or the garden route with all these adventure tourism hotspots. So I think you get what I'm saying. It needs to speak to actual destinations with real places that people can visit instead of just a family going on a trip, because it doesn't even tell me where to go at the end of the advertisement. It just says inspiring places with the SAT brand, which I think must change. We must talk about that later on. So if you can just speak about that, because it's a lot of money on marketing, and I don't think we're really getting enough value for our money on that one. Then, Madam Chair, the last question is on consultants. Somewhere in the report I read about the consultants, not in this one, but about the large amounts of money being spent on consultants. I think it's important that that we share this with our committee. What are the monies spent on consultants? And again, are we getting value for our money? Because they can spin us a lot of these advertisements and a lot of these promotional material, but I think we need to sit down and actually discuss the type of markets. I think you mentioned that as well. Who are we speaking to? Have we done a specific study on the type of markets locally that we need to entice? Sorry, it's not the last question. I actually want to come to the board, perhaps to the new chairperson. I see that some of our board members have not attended a single meeting, according to this report. They get appointed based on their skill, based on their contribution. It's really concerning that some of them don't attend the meetings. So perhaps if you can just speak to us how you intend fixing that. And then the very last question comes from the note that we got from the briefing pack, which says that there was 5 million rand allocated for domestic tourism, which was returned to the National Department of Tourism, given that the sector is struggling with growing domestic tourism. Is that true? And if so, can you please explain? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mkomo, followed by Honourable Bam Mugwane.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the input. Chairperson, through you, some of the questions I might be asking may have been answered previously, so I would like to immediately put in an apology and state that if these issues have been addressed before, can the respondent just respond and then the committee will feed me with that information so that we don't go back on matters. The first issue I would like to find out about is the Auditor General's report, I think I heard that it was an unqualified audit opinion. May I just find out on two top issues which came out of that report, which were matters of emphasis, unless if there were none, and which is something that doesn't usually happen. But just two matters of emphasis, I think that would actually help me a lot. The second issue is the issue which was addressed on the challenges which are facing tourism, which is basically the issue of water and the issue of expropriation of land without compensation. Can I find out how much of that is actually causing a challenge? And if it is causing a challenge, what is being done? Who are being talked to or who are being spoken to actually get to the bottom of matters or to try and level the playing field? Because these are challenges which we are aware of but would like to know about. I mean, even in Europe, people are talking about this issue of expropriation of land without compensation, which is a matter that many of us in our country would like to see actually being done, because it's an area which would be addressing the poorest of the poor and every other person. So it's actually a matter which is quite important. Another matter which I wanted to address is an issue which I had. I think you stated, sir, that you reach out to people that earn from 5,000 and above. Tell me, how low do you start actually to start conscientizing the very 5,000, so that when people reach 5,000, they actually know about tourism? When do you start? Do you start at school? How do you start? How do your programs advance as time goes on? Because I believe that the earlier you start with lessons, even in schools, the better. Because then when they reach adulthood, when they reach that age, at least they are quite conscious of matters. Another area which I wanted to ask about, it was the issue of, I think you spoke of twinning among provinces, where you may find that maybe Gauteng twins up with another province in order to assist. I think you said, I think probably it's the time you were talking even about Kimberley and all those areas. Tell me about Kimberley specifically, because you said they do have certain areas which are areas of interest today. How do you bring together other workforces to come in with you when you go in and you do a particular project, noting that flights definitely have been cut off in that area? Like, let's say, for instance, maybe buses, luxury buses or whatever, or maybe even trains, maybe luxury trains or beautiful trains or whatever, or, you know, those type of areas which are quite important to us. There is the issue as well on tourism experience. I noted that my colleague spoke about it. Like, let's say, for instance, how do you measure tourism experience? You do get visitors that get marked in our country and everything else, but then how do you actually get a clear measurement that this is the issue that is happening, and how much are we losing out of such type of issues? Then you spoke about the visas, where you said that in other countries, you know, I think you said in Dubai, where the Nigerians can just fly in and then they get, I think you said Dubai or what other country it was, where they get the visa at the airport. Has this discussion taken place seriously with the Department of Home Affairs to actually propose that? Oh, incidentally, some of us do sit in the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, so
That's just to state that whatever that comes out has got to come out in a way that, you know, we understand it, because definitely we'll ask Aplen about it, because we would like to know why is that not happening. Or even if it's not the department that's proposing it, even ourselves as politicians, we can propose it. And lastly, is the issue of the budget. You know, whenever people talk about money, there's something which actually happens to my mind, and that is it starts going a bit faster than normal. Once I saw that graph of the budget and everything else, there's something that is missing there. The issue of underspending and real savings. I'm using these two words deliberately, because an underspending is not a savings. Now, I heard that you have so much left now until the third quarter is finished. But tell me, what type of savings have you made out of all of that? Honest to goodness savings. Like, let's say, for instance, I give you 10 rands to go and spend on a particular issue, and you only use 6 rands to buy that particular issue as is, and you come back with 4 rands. 4 rands is the savings. Now tell me, where are savings in all of that? Because I don't see it.
Thank you, Chair. And I also want to join the members in appreciating the presentation. Looks like I'm a sweeper, and I'm going to be touching maybe. Not yet. Oh, good. Sorry. I didn't see. Sorry, Chair. I'm going to premise my question on the observations made from how tourism activities are actually non-existent or very, very minimal in most municipalities. I'm just wondering, I don't know how one could ignite the interest in those in these municipalities. Because tourism happens at the municipal level, and it would be nice to make sure that the municipalities participate, meaning the areas from which they exist do participate. Let me come to the slide. As you have tabled before us, South African tourism is already behind regarding the achievements of its 5-year, 5 and 5 strategies. What measures has the entity taken or are doing to improve performance, as the beginning of 2018 shows even a further decline? Remembering that even the president emphasized or mentioned that tourism was one of those entities we have to depend on in bettering our economic situation and creating jobs and mitigating the three challenges of joblessness, poverty, and inequality. I'm inclined to think that if we do not activate the interest of the municipalities and in developing tourism from even their LED structure, when they form their LEDs, then we are going to be lagging behind. And not only should the entity encourage the municipalities, but police or monitor and see if this is happening, because there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of interest, there are a lot of interesting areas that are within our municipalities. and therefore, in fact, I was quite endeared by in hearing that there are programs that are built around the Mandela centenary. That is quite interesting, but also, who else knows it? When the presentation was done, it was like the CEO was talking from a different world, because most of the things were things they were hoping to do, things that they were going to do, but most of the things are not evident on the ground. The slide, I think it's 10 or 9 or 10, you have shown a 31% decline in the early months of 2018. What measures have you taken to stop this downward spiraling of domestic tourism? Has this entity tried to embark on strategies to appease either the municipalities and the provinces? Because from observation, these areas don't seem to think that they are part of the chain that has got to attract tourists. Also, you talked about transformation somewhere, I can't remember which slide it was. There is lack of visibility of transformation. I don't know where it applies, but there is just no, there's very little, if there is any, but from the areas we have looked at, there's very little transformation that's happening. The, you know, PDIs are still scrounging around. They don't even sometimes know what to do about, or they know if there is something that could be done out of tourism. Let's come to grading. You know, maybe there are no recognized or tangible benefits in having to grade one's establishment. Maybe there needs to be an incentive program advertised which would whet the appetite to grade, because right now the establishments don't see the benefit in having to grade, because they make their money besides, even if they are not graded. So I think that maybe, in short, we advise maybe to review the policy on grading, like something like free and compulsory grading with benefits or incentives to the establishments. Maybe that would work. But otherwise, the tendency, you know, let me leave that. But grading is important, because it attracts the visitors to our establishment. And then, I think slide 35. It was going to be about that 5 million. It has already been addressed, and no, I think I'll stop the check. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the report as presented. I hope I won't ask things that have been asked already, because I had to attend to some emergency earlier on. Honorable Chair, when you look on slide number 10, which talks about the number of grading, number of graded rooms and so on, which is in red, meaning that they did not achieve. I was asking myself before the CEO explained why they have the red and what is the meaning of it. I was asking myself as to what does it mean nothing has been done in this. I think, Honorable Chair, the way in which they are doing it, making it red and saying nothing. Don't give it a market altogether. It's misleading in a way. I think we should give it a certain percentage. We did not achieve, but this is what we have done. Because we'll end up asking as to whether is it really benefiting us. Why have you spent money on this particular issue, yet you are saying you have done zero on it? So it is somehow misleading. After you have given an explanation, the rest you did not, but the one that you gave an example, like the percentage of staff migration from old to new, you said they were 155, we have migrated already 154, you are left with one. And if you take that to a percentage, it's 99.3%. Well, it's something good, it has been done. A lot has been done on it. But if we say totally it's red, I've got a problem. Maybe we must come up with some another color to say, maybe yellow to say partially, you know, yes. And then the one that we say totally has been done can remain red. But otherwise the way it is misleading. It makes people think that you are not doing anything on those things. So I think you should look into it. We have been talking about the issue of grading. I just want to check how are we going to move forward on it, because it has been done as voluntary, and voluntarily it does not yield any good results. And yet when these people come here, the people from international and everybody, if things are not well in those establishments, they don't talk about the establishment as an establishment. They say South Africa, this is what is happening. So maybe we should have a way forward to say how can we do it, so that maybe it is compulsory. How much are we spending in giving incentives? If we have staff that is doing grading compulsory from our side, having a unit to look into that and do that, I don't know. You can look into it. You are the ones who are on the field. I'm just talking from the way. Yes. The first million, I think they've already talked about it. I think it's the one that is about the domestic tourism that was not spent. It is really disappointing because I think domestic tourism is not doing very well. So we need to put more effort on it. Otherwise, I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, honourable members, and certainly the level of engagement is exciting us from this side. So much appreciated. I think it shows your involvement in care basically in the business. I'm going to ask from the CFO side, just to start off with some of the financial stuff, then I'll give to the COO and give to you as well, the strategy officer. And I can do the sweeping, as it were, in terms of making sure that whatever's not picked up. Oh, sorry. Okay. I clear the path, honourable member. I sweep. I do what is required. CEOs are overrated, believe you me. Just put over there. And then obviously, I'm a talker at the time, so I'll hand over to the chair, basically. Take it. Absolutely. And then I hand over to the chair to close off if there's anything else. So over to you, CEO.
Thank you, CEO, honourable chair, honourable members. I think from honourable Adams, that was the first question. Yes, I if it's a requirement that we need to put in, I think the unaudited figures, I can put it in the future. That will make no difference, but we must just realise it's unaudited and it might change in terms of the Indaba and Meetings Africa event. So that we can include that to give a more full picture on that. I think CEO on the value for money, I think on grading you will talk to that one. Also I think in terms of Mr. Honourable Foss, in terms of 78% of marketing, you will also talk to that one in terms of the do we get value for money. So it looks like I delegate upwards here. In terms of the AG report, I can report that we had, it's unqualified, we had no matter of emphasis, and we had no notes from Auditor General. We had, I think, 15 years now, none of those that you have referred to, Honourable Member. So we are clean in terms of that, I can assure you, in terms of that. So we there's no matter of emphasis, I can assure you on that one. Underspend, I know in terms of government departments, they have underspent, and I report on savings. From our side, we have quarterly meetings with the CEO, we have monthly meetings, but quarterly meetings with the CEO where we sit and we discuss the budget. In terms of public entity, there's no PFMA requirement that we have to disclose underspending and savings. Where we do not spend, where we have efficiencies. The CEO is very serious on efficiencies in terms of money that we spend, invest. He doesn't like the word of spending, he likes the word of investment. So that money, we look at that, we reallocate, and specifically where those red, where we report in terms of the red, how can we support that to make sure that we turn that into green. So the CEO is quite vigilant on those, of the efficiencies in terms of our money, but I can assure you we will have no savings and we will have no underspending where we sit, because if we have underspending, we will then not utilize the funds for marketing, which is our mandate. So we have none of that. You will also see in the financial statements when we bring it to the committee, there is no savings and underspending in terms of that. That goes for other priorities. We reallocate it to other priorities. I just want the 5 million CEO, I don't know, will say talk to the 5 million, yeah. I think there was three questions around the 5 million. Consultants, Honourable Foss, I think as we have responded previously in the parliamentary question, we've got two cases in where they challenged us in Labour Court, so quite a big amount, I think it's about around about 5-7 million rand. Is in Labour Court for one domestic person. The other one is from a person abroad which was fired in the UK. So, and they're just extending this now for about for 7 years. And about a month ago, we went for a hearing where we have kind of object in terms of what the new claims are. So the Labour, and it's quite expensive to have legal consultants abroad in the UK, so it costs us in pounds. I think also, in terms of our IT, we have the grading system is a UK system, and the support and the licensing is in terms of pounds, and that's quite expensive to manage that system. I think that's about the... And the research, and research also, the company that we've appointed in terms of research, they also, because I think that is a breakup of the consultants that we appoint, which is quite as expensive, as I said. But the IT from QIT system is a foreign, as I said, from UK, and that's quite expensive. We are looking, but I think the CEO can also talk to that, or second talk to that, we are looking to kind of customize it in South Africa. We did obtain approval from the Treasury to extend it for another 3 years, but they've also instructed us to look for a custom-made system. We did with our tender, and there was no response, or proper responsive, responses, tenders. We could not appoint, and that's why we had to approach the Treasury to extend it for another 3 years. But we, Daryl is busy looking at a proper process and developing a process to see if we can't customize that for our own purposes. I think that was the financial questions from all of you, unless I've missed something. I know there were five in terms of the domestic.
Thank you, honourable members. I would like to just tackle the question around the 5 million return to NDT. The 5 million was not an overspend. We've looked at what is the role of South African tourism in the domestic marketing space and what is the role of NDT as a department within the space of domestic development. I think the other question related to this 5 million was, where do you start? Because when the CEO was giving a breakdown of what is our target audience, he spoke about a 5,000 income bracket that we're looking into. So what the department and ourselves agreed upon is that the department will take that 5 million and deal with what we call domestic development. This is now going back to school children. How do we then create that awareness within the school children? How do we create that awareness in our pensioners? For example, we had a joint marketing initiative called Gogos on Tour. So those are the social programs that the department is running. to enable us as SA Tourism to look at the marketing side, creating the demand and facilitating travel. So the 5 million as shown in the CFO's books is not the underspend, but it was to enable the department to carry out those social programs as they relate to domestic tourism. But whilst we're on the domestic tourism point, there were a couple of questions around what is it that we're doing, what are some of the initiatives that we're doing to ensure that we turn around the numbers. I think in the presentation itself, the CEO gave, I think it's slide 55, if I can actually refer members, it's the annexure.
Slide 55.
Slide 55. What we've done, Honourable Force, linked to your question around are the adverts that we're actually showing gaining traction in terms of actually changing the domestic picture. In fact, the relaunched short left campaign was largely driven by the research which our chief strategy officer ran. I mean, the slides here talks to who are we targeting. So if you look at the advert itself and some of the experiences that we're showing, research tells us that South Africans were not actually seeing themselves traveling. Hence, we had to actually go back and say, let's go on a shoot and look at the experiences which will inspire South Africans. So it's not off the mark. We're looking at the target audience which we're actually, and if you look at the slide there, you're looking at the 1.4 million, which is the convert. But we're not leaving out the build and the defend segment who are already traveling, where the build segment are already traveling, but for VFR. So to your question, I think when you look at the analytics of how that campaign has run, I think it's something that we can actually share with the committee. It has performed very well.
But the figure's gone up.
Yeah. So if you look at how we closed the year in terms of the holiday trips, it might not be obviously related to the campaign that we've just launched. Mm-hmm. But the issue that we're faced with within the domestic market, which I think is a frank discussion, which the CEO has already mentioned, is the issue of affordability and is the issue of partnering with trade to enable them to package affordable deals for the local market. What are we doing about it? One of the key projects that we're running which I can mention with Flight Center is around the stock sales, for example, which is group travel. Gives us an opportunity for lay-by. That's what we're doing. And we're monitoring that project. I think it's 3 months now. We're waiting for the 6-month period just to monitor the uptake of that particular project. But the second thing that we're doing is we're now at a stage where we're in the procurement phase of looking at aggregators who have the reach. Because that's the other thing. How do we actually enable municipalities and the trade sitting in municipalities to actually sell their packages? So these aggregators have the reach wherein even the trade can actually walk in and upload their packages. And the reason why we're doing that, Honourable Force, is that when you look at our short left deal, the user journey is too long. By the time we actually direct the traffic into the short left journey, they still have to actually go to another website of a tour operator to book. So with partnership with the aggregators, what we're saying is we'll create the demand, but we will send our travelers or our potential customers directly to these websites where they can actually book. Because SSA Tourism, we don't have that. And those are some of the things that we're delivering for 18-19. The CSO can talk about issues around the measurements and the research that we've done around domestic tourism. Honourable Bam asked a question around the achievement of 5 and 5. To say we've now put this goal in the year one. 2017 was year one of the implementation of 5 and 5. What are the things or what are the measures that we've put in place to ensure that we close the gap? If we look at our market portfolio, what we've done is, one of the strategies is we have to defend our business within Europe. Europe is our bread and butter region. So if you look at how we closed the year last year, one of our biggest markets, which is UK, was flat because of issues of Brexit and consumer confidence being low in that market. So the team Europe, what they're focusing on is how do we defend our market share in Europe, but also looking at how we actually grow certain markets which we know we still have opportunities like Nordics and Germany. And I think in the last meeting we did submit a report which showed the performance around the Nordics and how we're going to actually extend the opportunity or tap into that opportunity within the Nordics region. But the other thing is in defending the market, which is strategy one, the second issue is we've looked at the markets which are developing. and say which are the markets which we are performing but we have not actually tapped into the entire opportunity that exists in those markets. US, if you remember in the last meeting, I've mentioned that we've done a deep dive in the US and said what we've done is how do we then diversify the segments within the US market. We have now identified niche segments like the African Americans. So the strategy that we have is how do we then target the African Americans in the US to try and actually bolster the numbers from that region. And then the second region which we've now identified as a strategy to cover the 5 in 5 is China. If you look at, I'm going to now link it to the question around, does the new hub head has a new mandate to operate in China? China is one of our key focus areas for 2018-19. And the reason is what the CEO has already mentioned, that if you look at global performance, every region or every market is growing out of that market. So what we're doing is we're going to link it to the 20-year bilateral between the two countries, which is China and South Africa. We're going to leverage off that relationship that has already existed. So one of the things that the hub has done quite recently is to look at South African businesses that are operating in China, look at the mission that exists, our embassy in China, partner with Brand SA, because we have a rep in China, and look at all the South African communities in China. That's the expert market. From there, look at how do we then use the hook, which is a 20-year bilateral, and using the Madiba Centenary as well, because that's it's a much more popular thing for us to do. Also, we're going to leverage off the president's visit to South Africa. So the president from China is visiting South Africa in July. So those are the things, and we know that he's the number one influencer in that market. So we're working together with trade to try and put packages to drive visit into South Africa. Also, we said we're going to look at some of the BRICS meetings which are happening. I think there is a summit which is happening. So there is already trade on the ground that there is packages that we're selling. So those are some of the things that we have now done to ensure that we close the gap in terms of achievement of 5 in 5. India is one of the markets that we've now identified. We know that we've got visa issues, but we're not retracting our investment in that market. Because once we actually pull off the accelerator, once the visa issues are dealt with, it's going to take us a long time to gain traction. So we're staying in that market, but we're trying by all means to diversify in terms of the Indian market knowing us for safari, but other elements to actually push for geographic spread as well as seasonality. So those are some of the initiatives that we're doing, to answer the question which says, what are some of the measures that you're putting in place to ensure that you close the gap in terms of 5 in 5? There was a question around the conversion of, from business events to leisure. One of the things that the National Convention Bureau does is each and every convention that we win, within the MICE element, there's what we call on-site support services. On the on-site support services, that's where we partner with the professional conference organizers to actually, we pitch what we call a sustainability village. And the reason why we put a sustainability village is to go beyond tourism. So instead of actually buying mugs and bags for delegates, we give delegates things like vouchers and say, go to a sustainability village. That's where you're going to get arts and crafts. So we help the industry to actually export their product. So the sustainability village is one of the initiatives to try and actually take tourism beyond just sleeping in a hotel, but for them to consume some of the arts and crafts that we have. But the second thing that we do to try and convert those delegates into leisure travelers is we have packages on site. I think Honorable Adams asked, are you physically there? We are physically there with tour operators, with our PCOs, with packages for day visits. Some of the delegates might ask what to do that evening when the conference starts stops at 4. What are the things that they could do in that city, for the next 4 hours? So that day visits packages that we put together we share information around what are the restaurants which are there, what are the shopping opportunities which are there. So that's how we try and diversify them from just sitting in a conference and going to a hotel. The other thing that we do is, with the professional conference organizers, before the convention itself happens, we sell packages to them to say you can actually extend your stay in South Africa. You don't have, if a conference is 3 days, you can actually add 3 or 4 days. So those packages upfront, before the delegate can actually come to South Africa, they've already made those decisions. But over and above that, we say to them, you can actually bring a partner. Whilst you're attending a particular conference or meetings, your partner can actually do the following activities, and we give a price point. So those are some of the things that we're doing from conventions and meetings that we've won. But from a domestic point of view, we have now started a project with NCB, domestic team and NCB, to look at national meetings, because we're not focusing only on international meetings. So the local meetings, we are now going to interact with the PCOs, the local PCOs, just for national meetings. For example, National Nursing conference, annual conference, to say, if it's happening in Durban, for example, let's put on packages to actually encourage them to stay further or stay longer. So those are some of the things that we're doing to ensure that we convert business events to leisure. And of course, we agree that if you look at the business events travelers, they spend more. They tend to spend more because the first part of the travel, already the corporates have already paid for it. But from a corporate side, not related to MICE, the first pilot project is around public service. So we've got a young DMC that we are now training to now start offering those packages to government employees. When, for example, if today this meeting was on a Friday, I could actually have a package and say extend my stay, because already that flight is already paid for. So all I need is accommodation and other experiences. So that's a project that we're going to pilot with public service, particularly tapping into corporate travel.
Thank you, honourable members. I'm going to talk just generally about the areas around tourism statistics. I think the first point around, not in any particular order, but the point around quantifying the impact of the negative perceptions on safety and security. Honourable member, you're right, we do have the data, and that is something that we will generate and provide for the committee to understand what is the losses as a result of that negative perception. I think broadly, when we talk about domestic tourism and the point around a previous submission to the committee around us understanding the VFR market, etc., I think just to contextualize our understanding around the domestic tourism market, it's quite a complex. I think firstly, tourism is a complex concept. Domestic tourism is no different. And within our context, particularly as South Africa, understanding the imbalances we have economically across the country and how people move for different purposes, it requires a lot more in-depth understanding than we have at present. And that was what what we've proposed as our plan is, and what we've started working on in this financial year, to understand that big component of the VFR market and how people travel and what are the big drivers that we can use to, in fact, as we talk about converting business tourists to leisure tourists, but understanding the role of VFR travel in that funnel of, you know, growing the holiday base. So our understanding of domestic tourism really started on the back of our 5 in 5 strategy, where we say we are aiming to grow domestic tourism by adding 1 million more domestic holiday trips. And our understanding of that, as has been discussed during the meeting as well, has led us to a position that we have right now. I think in previous meetings we've also talked about the quality of domestic tourism statistics and how we improve that, and I think we have embarked on a process to take what data is currently available and start creating some baselines that can improve over time. For example, the level of the of 5,000 rands where we start seeing the incidence of holiday travel appearing, and then trying to dig deeper to say how do we then build the culture of travel, where the question was at how low do we go before we start making domestic travel aware, South Africans aware of the opportunities of domestic travel generally. So our understanding of the VFR market, and we talk about it, and even at today's meeting, we talk about the impact of the economy on discretionary spend and the ability to travel. And what we don't have a scientific answer to right now is to say, what is really the link between the economic indicators and domestic travel? We can talk about it, we understand logically that there is an impact, but at the moment we're not able to say if GDP moves up, this is what we see in domestic travel, or if unemployment changes, these are the levers that we look at, firstly. I think secondly is also to understand the share of wallet of the average South African and where is domestic tourism featuring there. What are we, what is the average South African looking to spend their money on, and where do we then fit in, which will help us hone in on our strategies quite significantly. As we have right now, we know we have a segment that we've called the bold segment, which is where we know a large segment of people here travel, largely for VFR purposes, and they're predisposed to travel, and we're already working on that. So some of the desktop analysis and the analysis to come up with some of the science behind these levers are underway, and our plan for slightly later in this financial year, quarter two, quarter three, is where we aim to talk to people directly, because that's what we've done on this current study to understand the holiday travel. We've held focus groups around the country where we've talked to people to understand really from their perspective what the challenges are. And then just finally from my side, I think the comment made around geographic spread and one of the KPIs in our APP around establishing a baseline. Just to give some very quick understanding of how we've done that from a geographic spread perspective, is that in collaboration and in discussion with the provinces throughout the financial year 2017-18, the approach is essentially gearing all provinces towards the common goal of 5 in 5. And how does that target, which is annualized, translate into various provinces. So we're working on a fair share concept, which has been largely developed in consultation with the provinces, where the target, the growth figure for a province, is based on the share of arrivals that the province gets. And the growth target that we look at is in line with our 5 in 5 target, where we're looking to increase our market share as a destination globally. So the arrival increase that we look at year on year to get 5 in 5 is an X percent increase on our market share, and that translates back into the provinces. So it all links up. What we find as our annual international tourist arrival target, if you add up the arrival targets for each of the provinces, they add up to the annual target. And in that way, we ensure that there is greater alignment that feeds into the programs the CEO talked about to ensure that we get greater spread to the provinces. Sorry, I know that's a very fly-by answer to some statistics, but Chairperson, that's my response. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will let the CEO do the sweeping for today. Thank you. But I did want to respond directly to one or two questions that I think were asked of me. Ms. Adams talked about the issue of a legacy report, or maybe it's a handover report. What I have asked the last board to do is to prepare such a report, which I have not yet discussed with them, and I will be doing that in the course of the next week. But certainly some of the issues that they're highlighting as areas that they believe we can improve our up our game in, well, domestic tourism we've talked about, and that still remains an area of that they believe we should be attempting to be more effective around. They talked to the issue of statistics leading to insights. So it's not just the numbers and the collection of the numbers, but how do we lead those to insights that are actionable in a way that actually moves the needle? Because otherwise you can have a whole lot of numbers that just tend to confuse you, and I think that's important. They talked about our need to support the efforts around regulatory barriers, even though it's not our primary responsibilities, but how do we best support, whether it's home affairs, how do we best support them? What information do we give them to enable them to move on some of these issues? And and then I think in an overall sense, the effectiveness and efficiency of the organization. We've just spent some time reorganizing. And we were reorganizing for a purpose. The reason that we reorganized over the last year or so was so that we would come up with a more effective and efficient organization. Now, you know, the rubber must hit the road. We must deliver. We don't have the excuse of, oh, we are still reforming the organization. We've still got Project Ignite is now implemented, so people want to see results, as was expected out of the ministerial review. So, sort of come at a time where the excuses, there are no more excuses. It is now time for delivery. And I sort of look at you and I say, oh my gosh, that means next time I come here, I can't say, well, we're still doing Project Ignite. You're expecting to understand how is this organization, how are you? And I think some of the questions you raised really talk to that. So that is it in broad terms. I have not yet engaged with the board or with the executive of this organization. That all happens next week. So you're my first engagement. And in fact, it's the first time I hear some of the responses from the executive. I'm just trying to give you some of the highlight. There were two other specific issues you asked about the board itself and how the board is run, what the intention is around running the board, and the relationship between the committees and the main board, and how, you know, will we have meetings all on one day. My view is that the committee meetings must happen with a gap between them and the board, because the board has then got to absorb, because the committees work to support the board. So they must do their work. The board must have time to absorb that and then deliberate on it. So having them all on one day just doesn't allow, you know, I don't think that it allows that to happen. If it would be ideal because of what you're talking about, but I just don't think it does. And I don't know an organization that does that. And then the other issue around the board that was raised by Mr. Voss is around the attendance. This is something that I noticed very quickly. I think there are two things. One is, firstly, with the new board, a number of the non-attendees are no longer on the board. So that solves my issue. The second is around engaging. And in fact, my first engagement with an affected member happens to happen tomorrow, just to understand, you know, why aren't you coming? What are the issues? And so I can understand that. And then thirdly, I mean, it is for me to advise the minister, he appoints the board, and to say, please, you know, we're not effective. Because the people that have been appointed, that you've appointed, and I would recommend that that we do something after whatever process. But it's very important because, you know, if you don't have if we talk about efficiency and effectiveness, it's going to be, you know, that's just shooting ourselves in the foot if we're going to allow no-shows for boards for prolonged periods. So that's, I just wanted to answer those specific questions, and obviously the broader questions I will answer having engaged more fully with the organization, and answered some of the, and asked some of the questions that in fact you have asked today, because I have some of those questions myself, which I just want to ask. So with those words, let me hand over to the Sweeper.
Thank you very much, Chair. And honorable members, thank you again for this, the spirited level of questions coming through. Just to kind of touch on a couple of things what my colleagues have said, I suppose the question around consultants, we just need to classify it better between professional fees and consultants. Because once it's lumped up, it's also seen as a, you know, but audit fees and legal fees are professional fees, you know, as opposed to kind of consultant outside. Then some of the acronyms, and again, we used to use this language just to, a PCO is a professional conference organizer. And they are the people that actually manage the business events. They're the people that actually make and manage the logistics side of business events. DMCs, destination marketing companies, right? These are all the companies that actually, again, from a leisure side, actually package and sell the deal. As a tourism, there's no, we don't sell anything. There's no till. You know, so therefore, if we want activity to happen in KZN as an example, we are not the ones that package a 3-day, 4-day, 5-day. We are not the ones that actually sell. We're not the ones that actually manage some of the experience, but we rely on the industry and the business. And that's the difficult part. Coercing people to do something they naturally don't want to do. You know, so therefore, I'm saying to them, please don't market to India. Rather do KZN domestically. They said, no, CEO, but there's no money there. You know, and I think that's where now we kind of need to shift some things around. Anyway, let me quickly run through some of the elements that have been left out. Let me start with the Honorable Comrick around the volume value side. You know, so ask the question, should we not be focusing on when the value is, as opposed to the some of the issues, the elements over there? Just got some figures there. So the three big markets of Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and Mozambique are actually 50% of our arrivals. Right? The rest of the world is only 26%. Now, we've got to look at this like a portfolio of volume and value. If we put all of our eggs in one basket, we expose ourselves as an economy. Let me give an example. We all know around Ebola, when the world decided that all of Africa has Ebola, that very same international market that's got big value did not come. So therefore, we're left kind of exposed on that side. So therefore, what the regional tourists may lack in value, they more than make up for it in volume. So if you multiply the two together in rent terms, it's sitting basically on that side. So our view all the time is to make sure that we manage a portfolio between the volume and the value, and we get the right mix basically to make sure that we get to those places where we're at. We're also building a business for the longer term. So whilst we may see at the moment that they're not giving us the traction required, we've got to make sure that we can start to turn the tide around from that perspective. You also talked about, yes, there's fewer, but they're staying longer. Those are the results of geographic spread. We've been hearing more and more the second time as the third time visitors in this country. If we only still showcase South Africa as a mountain, safari, and the beach as an example, we lost. There's so much more of this country that they're not showing. So guess what? We're starting to show them. So now they're starting to add on another day, another 2 days, and therefore you start to get to see this geographic spread coming to play. Honorable Force, do we need a tourist police? In all these, what I call macro issues that face us at times, whether it's water, whether it's expropriation without land, and whether it's safety and security, we have got to be very careful as a tourism to stay in our tourism lane, because they're not just solely around tourism. They're actually bigger than that. And what I basically mean is safety and security is a national issue. It's not just a tourism issue. So therefore, you may have your tourism police, and I'm speaking purely from my opinion point of view, looking after tourists. But when a cash heist that's got nothing to do with tourists happens, it still impacts the perceptions around the country. So the issue here, what we try to look at, is to say, let's make sure that safety and security is for everyone in the country. We've got to improve that generally right across the board. However, as far as the tourism space is concerned, what can we do to make sure that within our space we've got things happening? So, number one is a crisis center, right? Crisis communication. When a tourist gets stabbed on Table Mountain, when a tourist gets mugged or whatever it is, we've got to kick in a whole crisis management system. Because, especially international ones, they never make big news here. They make bigger news in the country of origin. So therefore, our machinery kicks in. It's invisible to South Africans because it happens offshore. So therefore, coordination. We're starting to link up with the tourism industry to have a TSI, Tourism Safety Initiative, so that, you know, whether you operate a shuttle, whether you operate experience, if something happens, there's a go-to space within that perspective. So it's something we want to improve, and we're doing this with TBCSA, Tourism Business Council of South Africa, who is essentially the custodian that collects all these Thompson levies. They keep a portion of it to actually specifically look at safety and security issues there. The VAT and incentivizing travel and everything else there, Honorable Force, I can tell you right now as we speak that one of my EXCO colleagues, part of his KPIs is to make sure that we link up with loyalty programs. We don't need to reinvent this ourselves. There's e-bucks there, there's that there. How do we humble ourselves and go across to the private sector and say, let's play together. How do you redeem your points in travel, as an example? It exists there, but it's not being led, and we want to make sure that we start to pull some of these things through on that side. The aspect around marketing agency, are we showing actual people actual experiences, or we're just doing an inspiration? That's part of our evolution there, where we actually said, what's expected from us is no longer just to make people aware and putting all these glassy model pictures out there. We've got to make sure that we do conversion, and that's our biggest gap over there. So in our short left campaign, boom, 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 you see it, but guess what's missing? Who do I call to make this happen? What number do I press? Where's the button? What's there? You know, and I think the experience is left that gap. So now we are saying it's no longer good enough just to say we do marketing, but we've got to take it through the end in terms of fulfillment. And there's some plans, and I'll talk you through them in terms of what we're doing around there. If I may just ask you to please just look at page 55. It's 55. I know it's in the annexures. There's just 5 points around domestic tourism that are tangible, that we've identified, that we are doing basically there. So if I just ask from the middle of the page, it says, to address these issues, let's say tourism has 2018, I initiate the following actions. The first one, the COO is a leader to this. We're entering into agreements with established non-traditional distribution agents. We are talking supermarkets here. We are talking, points of presence, the shop rights, the pick and pays. How do I go in there and buy a ticket? How do I go then buy a 3-day package, a 4-day package? That's important because access becomes important. So therefore, we need to make sure and we partner with them that we increase our points of presence, not only just digitally or electronically, but we've got partners. CompuTicket, as an example, is one we've said. But at the moment, you can already buy a bus ticket, but you're buying it just a bus ticket. How do I buy a bus ticket end-to-end for $5.99 and include the package, as an example? Linking to things like sports tourism and everything else there. The second part that's very important as well. So there's a demand side and a supply side. If we only push demand and we don't look at the supply side, what's happening at municipality level? What's happening in Kimberley? And this is where we're partnering with the department on the destination development unit, where if we identify a gap, we say to them, we are suffering in this city, in this locality, because there are no experiences. You must now kick in and make sure that we build those experiences so that we can drive people there with a purpose. Because if there's nothing to do, nothing to experience in those cities, we can speak about geographic spread until we're blue in the face. I think Honorable Comrade spoke the last time about Pietermaritzburg, litter, grass, all of that kind of stuff. All of that needs to be swept up so that we can have something to market. The more products, the more experiences, the more diverse they are, the more we can start to push through on that side. So this is a very clear plan between us and NDT. Now what you're going to see is more alignment. They would go to places or develop places that we know we've got a gap in terms of the 5 and 5 side. The next one also becomes important, point 3. Again with the department, the sector support unit, we've got to develop a cadre, a new range or a new cadres of DMCs, destination marketing companies, and tour operators. The ones that are going to focus on the rural areas, that are going to deliberately package for domestic tourism. That's important because we don't do the fulfillment. So then how do we, together with the department, says we're going to create 50 of them, 20 of them, so that their job could be saying, how do I create a 5 package? Let me include that B&B, let me include that, and that's the package that we put over there. Without DMCs, without tour operators that are aligned to our strategy, we are not going to get anywhere. We can do all the awareness we want, but if there's no conversion, because ultimately of the day, you have to stay at an establishment. You have to go basically with a perspective. So that's deliberate and key from that side. The next one is partnerships beyond our deliberate or immediate space around tourism. Sports. Standard Bank, Soweto Marathon is an example. Cultural festivals, arts and culture. Again, it is important that we give people a reason to go to places they would not normally go to, and you use events as a tool. But with the events, you make sure that you can actually profile the destination, and there are DMCs that are able to convert so that you can pick up the phone and call someone or go somewhere to actually make this happen. The last one, number 5, very important, technology. We are actually investing in a system together again with the department called the NTVIS, or Amadeus project, as it were. And all it is to make sure that we can activate a cell phone, that everyone has a bespoke travel agent in their pocket. That actually, if I know that you like running and you like jazz and you like X, Y, and Z, we can push through to you specific activities or issues that speak to what you want. And at the click of a button, you can actually enable it and make it happen. We can also help through with our data collection side, because now, if we have more people registered on the apps and everything else, we can start to see how often do you travel, where do you travel to, et cetera, so that we can have more information that's tangible on that side. So those are the 5 key things that are going to help us on the domestic tourism side. I hope it gives you a bit of a sense that we are much more aware about and very deliberate about the things that we're going to do around this domestic space. We're not a deer stuck in headlights. We don't know. We're just throwing money at the problem. We are very specific. We're very deliberate. And if I could take you to the previous slide over there, we can also show you exactly which provinces are doing well from a domestic, which ones are not doing well from a domestic, which ones are far off, so that we can also channel resources to those areas where we know there's a deficit and it's sort of coming through there. So you can see it's red, it's painful right across the board, but now we can address it as opposed to just sitting at a high level. Now we can get it in detail. The other pain that we have, we absolutely have no jurisdiction or control over provincial tourism authorities. They don't have to listen to us. We can talk all we want. We influence them, we coerce them by bringing them on board. Similarly, with local government, municipalities, they don't at all have to listen to us. Some don't, actually. But they'll tell you their priorities about RDP houses and water and everything else. This tourism thing, please, just wait aside. Right? That's the reality that we have. But we try to coerce it. And as rightfully said, tourism happens on the ground. Let's talk about grading as an example. The zoning of a house from residential to a business is done at local level. They take 2 years to actually rezone. It's a local level issue. Yes, we have a vested interest. They're very, very much so. And we engage them, we inform them, we educate them as much as we can. But it's a gap that is there, but we are working with it. So therefore, once we identify where the problem is at, as an example, where we are leaking, when we look at events, we can direct events that says, well, Mpumalanga is doing okay. We don't need an event there, but we need an event in Limpopo, because it's dropping quite significantly. How do we prop that up as an example and get over there? And then lastly, please look at this. These are Q4 results. When we come and present the annual results, you'll get a 12-month wider scope, and we will include some of the elements that you've talked about, maybe missing in that regard, you know, into it. Absolutely agree with you. The way we present the APP is either on or off. It does not give you a sense in terms of how far off we're at. So it's either red or green. Definitely, I think it's something to put. That's my frustration, by the way, I've always said, is that if we're 99% there, you know, let's put it in there. If we're 20% off, let's put it there. So there's a correlation between the investment levels and also the performance that we get over there. Let me just see this. Statistics, definitely. statistics leading to insights is something that we're looking at improving all the time. Because the very same statistics or insights actually guide us in terms of the investment decisions that we make ultimately into those markets, into those areas from that perspective. The question around the 5,000 rand benchmark and everything else, absolutely. VFR, we see it as a funnel that ultimately feeds the business later on. And we always kind of have a debate within the organization. Do we stick to only things that talk to our ABP and forget everything else? Or do we actually need to look at the wider scope? So we have to be very cognizant that we're building a business for the future. There's a lot of the work that we're doing now, you know, will probably kick in 5 years' time when some of us are gone from the organization. But we want to make sure that, you know, there's continuity and activities from that side. Then my last one is around Indaba and Meetings Africa, which event successful financially. We don't only measure success of those events financially. They're more than that. Because, again, it's not a matter of how much do we spend and how much do we sell and get back. It's an enabling platform. The real business actually happens when the tour operators and DMCs do those deals. We create those platforms in order to drive the very same APPs that we have. So that if we know that we've got a gap in market X in Kenya, we will disproportionately have more Kenya operators and trade at Indaba to make sure that we prop those spaces up. So it's a tool. It's a marketing tool as well that we also use in terms of that activity. So I think with those few closing words, I want to thank the committee again for the questions. Much appreciated. A lot of them, please, we do take in mind and we build as we go along. And much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO and your team. I want to register, CEO, that from what we've gathered here, from the questions that members were putting out to you, you can see that there is a cause for concern for the KPIs and the targets that you have not met, especially on the issue of marketing. Because your core mandate is to market South Africa. Now, if you are not achieving on your core mandate, it means you are failing. I don't want to use the word failing, but it means something is not going right. Perhaps I would then request that you should come to the committee, a meeting. We should arrange a meeting where you bring us all the joint marketing agreements, the international ones and the domestic ones, so that we see what's the value for the money that we are putting into those joint marketing agreements and whether we are deriving any value for the investment that we are putting. Because if close to $1 billion of the amount is spent on marketing, but we are not getting the required results, it means something is wrong. And then I don't want to push away also the issue of safety and security, because it's a major thorn out there. Because you can't say safety and security is a broader objective of the country, and we do not take initiative to say what are we doing as tourism. Because if let's say for an example on tourist attraction sites there's more visibility of tourism monitors, anybody who's got any ulterior motives to come into that space and do mischievous things, if they see visible sort of, I don't want to say policing, but monitoring, it will deter any person who has any idea. Perhaps we should then give us the strategy around ensuring that there are tourism monitors in most of tourist attraction sites throughout the country. And what is business and yourself? What are you working towards ensuring that those strategies are effective? Because your effectiveness people would come to visit South Africa, go out there and say and tell their relatives, I was in South Africa. The perceptions that are out there that South Africa is not a safe country are not there. I've seen many tourism safety officers visible in uniform who are ensuring that tourists are safe. Then The third one that I want to package, actually, I want to package it to you, Chairperson Mulwabisi. You know, ever since we've come into this portfolio committee from 2014, we had two issues of concern around the issue of grading and around the issue of domestic tourism. Somewhere, somehow, we have been pumping money into these programs and have not yielded any tangible results for the value of the money that we pump into these two programs. Because it's one thing to say we want to drive the domestic travel space, but as of now, you know, I want to concur with Honorable Krombok that we still have not yet, we still don't know exactly who are we actually targeting and what, how are we actually going to drive the domestic marketing space. From what I hear is lots of talk and lots of talk, but I don't see any tangible strategy that says we are actually getting to the root cause. We understand that people do not have money, but as much as they do not have money, they do save. They do have some certain savings, and would purchase a cell phone that cost about 10,000 rand. You know, it then tells you that it's not the issue of not people having money, because if you look at a travel experience, maybe to the Kruger National Park for a weekend, it would be even less than 10,000 rand. Yet we talk about affordability and so on. And then the second one would be the issue of the grading. It seems that the incentives and the basket of benefits that we continuously have put out there are not enticing enough to ensure that establishments take grading as a priority. It means something is not right at that space. I want to package this to you, Chairperson, so that you ensure that moving forward, as you steer this boat called the governance of SAT as the board, you ensure that you put all your efforts towards this. And I want to appreciate the engagements, the honest engagements from SAT. You know, putting things honestly as they are to say, yes, we are struggling. Our marketing, we are not, certainly we are putting money, but we are not yielding any good results from the money that we invest. Says that we need to now look at other strategies so that we ensure that the money that we put out there has value, with as value for the investment that we put out there. Coupling it with the issues of safety and security, let's not just push them away and say they are national competence. Yes, they are national competence, but what are we doing as SAT to ensure that there's visibility, to ensure that on our side, you know, look for an example, there are green scorpions that go out into the ocean. Those are not police, but they're ensuring that within that space they are monitoring and ensuring that those that would want to come and do mischievous things on the ocean are held accountable. So those are initiatives that are driven by sectors and departments on their space. So we should also be doing such on our space, you know. And with these few words, honorable members and SAT, let me appreciate the fact that we've had a fruitful engagement and we are constantly learning from each other, and we should definitely improve where we are lagging behind. And thank you very much. Honourable members, we have two items. We've got two sets of minutes that we would be looking into. And thank you very much, and have a safe trip back to Gauteng.
Okay. In fact, the meeting has taken longer than
minutes that are there. We are going to go into the minutes of the 23rd of May. Page 1 is everything that's reflected there as per your attendance. And then we go to page 2. Page 3. For the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in the portfolio committee. Honorable Adams.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes as laid before us.
Can I move for it? Can I call for a second?
Thank you, Chair. Second.
Honorable. Thank you. Can we move to the second set of minutes, which are for the 30th of May, 2018. On the first page is our attendance as per the reflection on this first page. Page 2.
Honourable Chair, on page 2 under introduction, the fourth line there, starting with the secretary, indicated that the governing party, the African National Congress, has advised the committee section in the filling on the filling of the existing vacancies of the chairperson and the whip. Not chairpersons, yes. And then the last sentence on that very same paragraph, the Portfolio Committee on Tourism was one of the affected committees with vacancies. Thank you.
Yes, vacancies. And then page 3. Page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, and over to Hela.
Again, Honorable Chair, under the decisions. The sentences are a bit cumbersome. I thought maybe it would be better if we say the department agreed that it would rework the design, layout, and the outlook of the draft document and improve it before printing.
it is somehow cumbersome the way it is now. And then the second one also, the department agreed that it would share copies of the implementation report of the 2011 NTSS with the committee through the DG's parliamentary liaison office. And remove the will be, remove
okay,
the would.
It's the beginning of the sentences.
Yes,
yeah.
That is properly. Yeah.
The word order. Okay. I think that can be corrected. Honourable members, can I call for a mover for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in the portfolio committee? Honourable Masihela, with the corrections?
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
I move for the adoption of the minutes with the corrections made. Thank you.
Can I have a second now?
Chair, I second the move.
Thank you. Honourable members, the minutes are duly adopted. I'll hand over to the Secretary of the Committee to take us through announcements and the reworking of the program.
Thanks, Chair. Today's Portfolio Committee meeting is the last meeting of the Portfolio Committee. Members will recall in the last meeting the committee requested us to look into the program of the committee and see whether can we combine the meeting of the 6th of June and the 13th of June. Then when we look into the whole picture, then we have recommended, honorable members, that if we do it that way, it might be complicated, as for instance, even now, we can see we wanted to take up some of the other things with the entity, but we really couldn't sufficiently do due to time. So what we are proposing is that the meeting with the National Department of Tourism, we defer it to the 15th of August. Because members are coming back from the constituency on the 14th of August, then in that week on the 15th, and then we will deal with that fourth committee report of the NDT before we can go to the BRRR report for the end of the year. And then the other thing, Chair, the committee legacy report, in your absence while you are in the constituency, when as admin staff, then we will deal with that issue, so that when you come back at least you can get an interim report. The only thing that is holding us now, we just want to make sure that the framework that we have currently is not going to be changed by Parliament. Because currently we do have a framework, but we just to get a surety that is the same framework that we are going to use. Because so many things are changing at Parliament consistently. So if we can get that, the information is there, Chair, a lot of information in our files since 2014. When you started the committee up to until at this time to this meeting. So the information is there. We will just load the information into the legacy report of the committee so that when you come back, at least you've got an interim report, and after the end of the year, and then we can finalize the report for the committee to see and look at it so that in the new term, when the new committee takes over, at least they know what we didn't achieve, what we did achieve, where they must focus, and all of those things. And also the third issue, Chair, we were also asked by the committee to look into the issue of roping in the portfolio committee on agriculture regarding that correspondence we have received from the communities around the Kruger National Park in Mpumalanga. The correspondence that we have received as a Portfolio Committee on Tourism, they also did receive that correspondence. So what we want to do, we will coordinate the meeting of chairpersons so that we can plan on around the approach of this whole matter, before we can have this joint meeting, so that representatives of those communities, we can invite them to come and brief the joint committees. We also want to avoid a situation where the community will come to us and then we will refer them to agriculture and then agriculture refer them to environmental affairs. That is quite frustrating to our communities. So we felt the best way to handle the matter is for us to have a joint meeting in one committee room and then we call them so that they can come and present their case to the three committees, so that when the decision is taken, then we know we direct them to the right corner where they should be going. Those are the issues, Chairperson.
Thank you, Secretary. Honourable, let me afford Dr. Kuzoy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm thinking through you, Petra. Department has these clusters like people responsible for certain provinces. And I'm aware the same correspondent maybe is going to the department. Maybe we can drop in those people so that before this meeting takes, if we can get information about the programs that the department is doing around those communities so that it informs this meeting, particularly for our chairperson. I think it would be better to coordinate through a person responsible for Limpopo in terms, because I think there's a director responsible for each, even with the DTT. I'm not sure whether that setup is still there with the new structure.
No, there is still people who sit, but they for the project. But I'll get the information if the committee secretary, Mr. Bultina, just can email me that later. Then I can forward and I can double check and make sure that they've received such correspondence.
Honourable members, allow me to wish you a very fruitful constituency period. May all your activities blossom while you are at constituency, and may you ensure that those that we are representing as members of parliament can hold us accountable and ensure that we are on the ground and visible to them and interact with them. May they not only show their members of parliament on TV. So when we are at constituency, let us touch base with our constituency and ensure that they see their public representatives on the ground. With those few words, the committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you.